It's time for Mac Break Weekly, our first show of the new year, and Andy's here, and Renee's here, and Alex Lindsay are all here. We'll discuss the Steve Jobs documentary that CNN aired a couple of nights ago. We'll talk about why Apple's stock price is the worst it's been in a long time, and all the rumors about new Apple products for 2016. It's all next on Mac Break Weekly. Stay here.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 488, recorded Tuesday, January 5th, 2016, the over-under tip. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by LegalZoom. Get your life organized today with an estate plan bundle at LegalZoom.com. Whether you need a will or a trust, they're not a law firm, but you do work with an independent attorney in most states to find a plan that best fits your needs. Enter MBW in the referral box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a beautiful website or cover page for your business, portfolio, or online store. Enter the offer code MACBREAK and you'll get 10% off. Squarespace. Build it beautiful. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. And it's a brand new year, so we welcome the full panel for our first show of 2016, starting with Alex Lindsay is in town.
Hello, hello.
More and more. We're glad to have you from the Pixel Core. Hello, Alex.
I'm wet, but here.
Yeah, it's pouring rain. Thank goodness. We're finally getting some rain. I'm wet, but I'm here. Yeah, you shouldn't have the show title really at the beginning of the show because then it's too easy to guess. That's Andy Iannocco chiming in from Boston, where the weather has finally reverted to normal, I think.
Yes, I've got my Maine hunting guide cosplay on for the first time in the season.
I saw that.
Well,
picture.
You know, if you're going to go all the way up there, you're going to want the cabin for a month. You don't know if you're going to get snowed in.
Oh, yeah.
We got plenty of moxie up there, plenty to drink. Yeah. You're good.
Can't get that from here. And, ladies and gentlemen, from Montreal, I don't even know what the weather is, but we'll find out, I'm sure. Renee Ritchie of iMore.com. Hello, Renee.
Elio, it was 0 Fahrenheit yesterday, minus 15 Celsius. But luckily, some kind souls at Twit sent me this gentil chapeau.
You finally got that. It finally came through customs.
It did.
What is this, actually?
Oh, Americans. No, fezzes are cool. I mean, we watch Doctor Who here. We know what these are.
Yeah, you know. It's not exactly a fez. That's a chapeau.
No, yeah, absolutely.
Slightly different.
A gentil chapeau.
Did you all have a lovely new year? And I guess I haven't seen you since Christmas. So before Christmas, I think you all celebrate Christmas, right?
Yes.
The children have a lovely... What did they get? What do you give the most sophisticated young people in the world? Did each of them get a 3D camera and...
My daughter somehow had she's got a thing called American Girl, and
I love American.
She got a wheelchair for American Girl,
which
I thought was
they're all
never
about
seen
diversity.
A wheelchair. Yeah, so I didn't. She was very excited about
that's
getting
so
a wheelchair,
neat.
And I was like, I did not.
Abby
expect
was
that.
So into American Girl when she was that age.
So she got a wheelchair for she got
what's
a lot
her doll?
Of,
do you know which one she has?
It's an African American doll, but I don't know which one.
Yeah, see, each one has a history, and you get the book and.
Yeah, so that was the most surprising one, I think, that I saw. And then my son got a lot of Star Wars stuff, Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
And he's got
of course.
He's got an X-Wing that I didn't even get him for him. But I am working on the dirt wash for the Millennium Falcon because it came in a little too clean. So, we're going to paint
needs
it over.
Greedily,
we took the model that came, and now we're going to, we're going to the hobby shop and getting some good thinner and some good, trying to pick the right color, and then we're going to brush it all through and everything else.
She probably has the Addy doll.
Probably, yeah. Well. Yeah, so anyway, but outside of that, a lot of physical. We don't, what's funny is they have, we don't ever think of getting them electronics because they have the iPads.
They don't need them.
And
right.
So, the funniest thing yesterday, yesterday was a day off for them. I guess it's in school, in service for the teachers or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
The funniest picture was my son was watching Minecraft TV. It's on YouTube or something. And across the thing was my daughter she had all the little bits out. So my son is watching TV and my daughter is sitting there, my 6-year-old daughter sitting there building circuits.
I can make a TV.
With little bits.
Okay. If you're going to insist on watching that stupid show, I'm going to make my own TV.
And if I make noise and he would be, and I make clear that she has priority. She's building something useful. You're just watching TV. So she makes noise with a little speaker. That's
her priority. Let me see if I can electrocute my brother.
Yeah.
This is interesting. They not only have wheelchairs, they also have arm crutches.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
She picked it out.
I was like, how
did
you
kind of like this? Because it really is, they celebrate diversity with these dolls.
I think it's a really good idea.
I think that's really great. Yeah. That has nothing to do with Apple, however.
We got BitsBox for my little godchildren.
Yeah.
And basically every week you get this little programming kit and it walks you through making JavaScript programs, and one is 7 and one is 10. And within like a week or two, they could actually modify it. I mean, they modified it to make the main character blow up as often as possible, of course. But they learned how to go in and change which sprite was put there and how the animation worked and how many there were. I was really surprised because it just looked like a bunch of junky JavaScript to me, but they really got into it.
I wasn't impressed.
Kid, you're learning junky JavaScript. Yeah,
well, I mean, it's sad that kids have to learn JavaScript.
They should learn Lisp. They need a real language.
We had Swift. The basic
kids stuff. Today.
Yes, yeah,
Swift would be good.
They really took to it. I was really happy, and now they love programming. They're sitting there. They get a certain amount of time every day. You can barcode scan it onto your iPads. So you can try it out on there as well, and it worked really, really well.
Wait a minute. They don't have to type it in like we used to.
No, they do. They type it in on the computer, but if you want to transfer it from the computer to your iPad, to make it easy for a kid, you just hold up the camera, and it automatically transfers it for you.
It's BITSBOX.com.
Yeah.
And did you get it just for one subscription for both of them, or –
No, we got them one each because they're kind of possessive.
Well, I think that's a good idea. Right. But do they get the same thing each month, or do they get...
Yeah, and like this month the theme was superheroes, and it came with a little cape in the box. So it was really cool.
This is a really cool idea.
The clicking you hear right now is me ordering subscriptions.
Yeah, I like this idea a lot. BitsBox. I think you're zoomed in a little bit, Jason. Jason Kleanthis is here. He is our new producer, by the way. Jason Howell has... moved along to host. He's already been a longtime host of All About Android and Android App Arena, but he's now moved along to host TNT as well as those other shows with Megan Maroney. And TNT, our news daily news show, has moved to 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, because we realized you do it in the morning, nothing's happened yet. So if we do it at the end of the day, and that way it also makes sure that we do it in a timely enough fashion so that most people around the world can have it for their morning commute.
Mm-hmm.
So 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, right about midnight UTC for Tech News Today. Jason Howell there. But we're thrilled to have Jason Kleanthis on board.
Thank you.
He came from the chat room. Right, Jason? You were effing done.
Is that where you grew up?
I grew up in the chat room.
I
sharpened my teeth in the chat room.
But I love it when we can get people who are regular, and you were very regular in the chat room, and tried to get a job with us for how long? A year? 2 years?
A couple of years.
And you passed the test.
When the housing market was much better.
You passed the test, yeah.
That's like the temple where someone just sits outside for years.
John did that. Jammer B did that. Jammer B also, we got to know him in the chat room. He moved here and bought a house next door. Or rents a house next door.
Yeah.
I didn't have a job for him. Finally, I felt bad. I said, well, we can find something for you. So Jammer, and he's now one of our most valued employees, as are you, Jason. So I like doing that because it means that we can kind of incorporate people who are regular fans into the show as opposed to some. And some great employees never heard of Twit, but it's nice if you know what we're doing. No, I mean, Kara is fabulous. I don't think she'd ever heard of.
Yeah. Or Kevin.
I don't know who Kevin is. Who's Kevin? No, I'm just kidding.
I think he's an editor.
I think he's going to edit this show, so I'm sorry, Kevin.
No one will ever hear that.
Is there anything to... Well, Apple shares closed the year with the worst performance since 2008. Stock market apparently is not as bullish, or maybe they were just selling it off.
No connection between stock markets and reality, Leo.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's not even a news story, but it's sort of.
It's a good opportunity for Apple to do more buyback, which is my guess is what they'll kind
shares
of
shares down, finished the year down 4%. That's the first down year for Apple since 2008, 7 years.
Right.
So that's significant.
They're too successful. There's no room to grow. I mean, if they were a horribly performing company, there'd be optimism for the future.
So some of it's sell off, but I think that's exactly what people are saying is, you know, where are they going to go now? What can the next big thing be? They can't possibly, They're going to be a company that's not going to have that kind of massive growth going forward.
They could.
The attitude, they've even warned people that that's the case, right?
You'd previously buy Coke or Gillette or something and just hold it for decades, and that would be what you retired on. But now people want to turn it over quickly. You know, if you just buy Apple and hold it, your returns are incredible. But if you want to sell it every day, it's not what the market wants. They want a stock like Amazon where, oh, no profits now, but one day.
Apple shed a DuPont. That means so they lost $57 billion in market cap in 2015. That's about what DuPont's worth. So they shed a DuPont. They're now worth a mere $590 billion.
Well, and I still think that they are, I mean, we should remember that they really, I mean, people talk about it, but they are on a trajectory to buy themselves out at some point. I mean, you know,
I think that's actually
look at the buyback.
Good.
By 2022, 2024, they could be not public anymore. You know, and I think that every time we see this, the stock drop, we'll see if my theory is correct. We see the stock drop, you'll see them buy a bunch, you know, billions of stock, you know, and there's a whole math to that because they're paying, you know, they're borrowing money to buy the stock.
Yeah. Right.
To, you know, it's very complicated, but I think that we'll see that kind of work then.
Could they still afford to, like, get top flight executives to abandon careers at other companies if there isn't the carrot of we will allow you to buy shares of stock at this price?
That's the trick, isn't it? In Silicon Valley, part of this growth is fueled by the need to have stock options that are worth a lot. And they're only worth a lot if you buy at a low price and then the stock grows and now you can sell at a high price. That's where you really...
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of their growth comes from... They certainly don't simply buy a business and then stamp the Apple logo on it, but it's like they'll find someone who's just a soup. They'll find a superstar who absolutely knows what they're doing and simply say, do you want to work for an uncool company, or would you like to work for one of the coolest companies ever? And maybe instead of having a piddly $80 million, have a more handsome $190 to $200 million.
There's a lot of places that Apple can still disrupt. I mean, you know, the thing is that right now they've been drafting off of the iPhone for a long time. But if you look at if they're able to do something with cars, there's a lot of growth opportunity there. They're also, I mean, if you look at the fact that they've stepped in between banks and consumers, there is how many people would. If Apple opened a bank that said, we're not going to do hedge fund, we're not going to do crazy things, you can put money into it, how many iPhone users would put their money into an Apple bank? Probably most of them. a large percentage of people would move pretty quickly. I know if I knew that Apple was doing that, I mean, you know, because now returns, putting your money in a bank is low anyway. What really makes the difference is service and being tied into your everything else. I could definitely see people moving down that path. And with Apple Pay, they're basically putting themselves where they're having that relationship and cutting that relationship off. And the same thing with the phones. I mean, if you look at where Apple's going with Wi-Fi and everything else, I mean, Apple is slowly moving towards a position where they could, you know, over some point in time, disconnect the phone companies from the consumer.
Apple successfully patented a way to send money via iMessage in December, which is odd because I don't know how they got this patent, and maybe it's very specific, but because people have been sending money via texts forever.
Remember, like 2 years ago, there was a patent for Apple iTrip where you could book a cruise and give feedback on your. I mean, there's just a patent for everything.
Yeah, well, and you should patent it. And if the unfortunately, the USPTO's philosophy seems to be, we'll grant any patent and then let the courts, sort it out.
Right.
Which is really not a good way to do this. But
to Alex's point previously, if you just look at this last year with the Apple Watch, I've had nice watches for a decade, and all of them, when I wanted to change the link bracelet, required me to go to a jeweler or get fancy jeweler's tools. And now I can just pop out a link and close it. And I hope everyone adopts that. Yeah. I had Wacom tablets and Cintiqs for years, and there was always an air gap, and there was always parallax. And now the Apple Pencil gets rid of that, and I hope... Apple has a way, whether you like their products or not, of coming into an industry and at least giving it a fresh set of eyes, and that forces the entire industry to evolve.
It's been this way since 2001. It's more about refinement than it is about complete invention, about innovation in the sense that we're going to create something nobody's ever seen before.
There were so many terrible headlines this year. Apple didn't do anything. Apple's in beta. None of Apple's ideas were original. That's been true since the iMac, the computer, the phone, the tablet, the watch. Every one of these things existed before. Yes. They're advantage, their skill, their what they offer is the mainstreaming of technologies. They make it accessible to a far wider group of people than it was ever accessible to before, and that's been their key to success continuously for decades.
Kind of. I mean, they're still. If there's something they haven't really proven really strongly yet, it's the ability to be the breadbasket for the entire world. they can make a phone for people who can afford to buy an expensive phone. They can't make a phone for people who can't afford a really expensive phone.
Isn't that by choice, though, Andy? They don't want to.
Well, no. Like, again, that's,
well, they
that's,
also
no,
set that's, the map. That's, I mean, that's
absolutely
down.
That's absolutely by choice. It's just that when you when it's interesting to think of what they would do if they had to if they were going to open a bank. And if they were to do any sort of product or service where they don't really have the luxury, and it is kind of a luxury, to be able to cherry pick the very, very best, most attractive customers. When you open a bank, as good or as bad as, you know, Citibank, as Bank of America, as all these other banks are, you have to serve the people who have a $750,000 401k, and you also have to serve the people who are basically opening their first bank account and trying to establish credit. I'm not saying that Apple would fail at that. I'm saying that it would be not the sort of thing that I would say, oh, of course they'll do a great job at
right,
that.
Right.
I'm glad that the industry is so much richer, obviously, with Apple's voice in there. It's a really wonderful and very rich chorus of voices of different attitudes, different approaches about technologies and the way people interact with them. Apple Pencil, for instance, is brilliant for people like me. I won't speak for anybody else. People who are who just need something that's quick and accessible that feels as much like a natural tool as possible. When I speak to professional artists, they say that they love it for sketchbook sort of stuff, but it falls short of what they need for actual production work.
Really?
And that's not a failure point. That's not a failure point for Apple. That's just simply saying that they chose the tool that they wanted to make. So it's
generally the feedback I've gotten from.
My mom, who is an artist, loves her. Of course, she's telling me because I gave it to her for Christmas. So maybe she's lying. And she's not a professional in the sense she sells her art. But she loves her iPad and pencil and really has been using that with Procreate and is blown away by Procreate.
Well, and I've just – the concept artists that I've talked to that have been playing with it have said that they think it's really great. It's just still not quite –
It doesn't integrate into their workflows or anything yet.
But I think it's fair.
But that's step one. I mean, it's gotten 99% there or 95% to there in one try. So, you know, and again, I think the other thing when we talk about the banks is that Apple doesn't have to provide a full thing of service.
Absolutely
they can say,
not. Venmo
hey,
doesn't.
We'll take your money. We'll take your money and give you a small return back on it. And then the only thing Apple needs to do from that point on is provide loans to people buying Apple products. And that is it. Like, they don't have to do your house loan. They don't have to do your 401k. They don't have to do whatever.
Like the iPhone buyer's program.
Yeah, I mean, you just do, you know, if you just look at financing that with other people's money, it's just.
Did they outsource? They outsourced, though.
Yes.
They didn't do that themselves. They outsourced the lending for the iPhone.
Right.
In the U.S.,
they could.
Which is why it was small distribution at first.
Yeah.
But they could. I mean, the thing is they could say, we're going to open a thing where you can put your money in. All we're going to do is interest. We're not going to do anything
else. They could do a lot of things. They could open a zoo.
Right.
the Apple zoo.
I think it's really important. It's important discipline for Apple. And Steve Jobs, you know, was very clear about this. To say, yeah, there's many things you could do. And Apple so far has been very good about not doing a lot of that, even though we say they should buy the music industry. Why not?
Yeah, no, I think that they're putting themselves, whether they decide to do it or not, they're putting themselves in that position. And I think when you look at where they've gone as far as low-cost phones versus high-cost phones, when 49% of the activations in the, I don't know, they said over Christmas are Apple, what you're seeing is there's a handful of people that are geeks that are buying, you know, Android because it gives them a lot more freedom. I own Android and I use it for certain things that I need. And then there's a whole lot of people that buy them because they're a smartphone that they never add an app to. Like my parents never add apps to their phones. They don't know anything about it. And so, but what we're seeing is when people graduate from that base phone that they bought really cheaply, that just is a phone with a screen, a lot of them are moving to an iPhone, you know, as it becomes available. And I think, you know, when they have the money, when they have the means to do that, and they're not moving to the higher end Android. And I think that's a real
conscious decision on Apple's part. Where can we make the most money?
Mine
for gold where the veins are. You don't,
take
the whole amount.
I think it's a it's misleading when we say that, you know, Android has, I mean, it is, I mean, Android has this huge market share, but
it's all,
which is incredible for Apple because what it does, what the huge market share that Android has does is it keeps Apple from having to have monopoly conversations, you know? And so, you know, it's the same reason why Apple was kept partially,
Microsoft kept Apple alive.
They thought that was going to, you know, keep them out of hot water. And so Apple being a minority share, but what we're seeing though is the, of the people who are actually spending money, they are the vast majority.
Right.
Well, I would hate for the new slogan for Apple to be Apple, go be poor someplace else.
No, why? They'll never say that.
I don't necessarily think that's where they're heading. I'm saying that there are things that so many different companies do well, and what Microsoft, for instance, does well is appreciating that there are people who have to buy 40 computers and they have only X amount of dollars to do it. What's the best way to provide the best computing services to the people who are in that sort of market? Apple just has not as yet shown I'm not saying they don't have the ability, but they haven't shown the ability to do that. One of the great freedoms that they have is because they have so much, they're so financially successful, they have one of the greatest things a company can have, the ability to pursue their own destiny. They're not driven by market needs. They're trying to make products that are successful, yes, but they don't feel as though any place that there's money on the table, they don't feel as though they have to go get that money. They really are driven by what they want to do.
The one thing I just wanted to say,
in case I don't get a chance to say it later on, is that I really think that if we're talking about untapped products that Apple hasn't really exploited yet, it really is their philosophy, their style, the way they have of educating management. The more interesting to me than Apple creating a bank is Apple creating a business school. Like if they had a way of simply saying, we will train your executives or we will train your management or we will consult on the creation of your company
and show you,
instead of an in-house sort of thing. If it's a method of saying, if we like your company and we actually want to buy you or we want to stick our thumb in that particular blueberry pie to get a little bit a taste of it. Part of what we will do if you're getting hand over 15% of your company to us is that we will give you access to Apple University and we will basically be your advisors and your consults on that. Because you can't deny that the way that Apple runs its company is perfect for Apple. And it's kind of intriguing to think about what are the broader lessons that you could maybe apply towards any company or any process that might benefit pretty much anybody.
I think it would make a difference. Apple. I'm not sure if it would be, cost effective for Apple. I mean, I think that the when you look at the general revenue and the advantage that they have by running the company the way they do it, I think that I think it's hard also when you think about the low cost and everything else is how do you getting returns out of low cost is really hard. We look at parts of the business, like for instance, the business that I'm in, which is live streaming. Almost all of our companies are Fortune 100. A handful of them are Fortune 500. We look at low-cost solutions. Like we really want that because we know that at a certain rate, if I charge a certain amount for live streaming, there is so much work that is just like it's infinite. Right now with the demand, except I can't figure out how to do that reliably over time at that price. And I'm just trying, no one can. That's why it's infinite available. But it's really hard to do it well. And I think Apple does, really focuses on these little details. And it'd be very hard to do that if they focused on anything lower cost. They make a lot of profit on it, but it also gives them a lot of room to play and figure out that process.
I think it's also a really good symbiotic relationship where Apple comes up with a lot of ideas that do help mainstream the technology in terms of making technology that everybody can use. Maybe they can't afford it, but they can at least use it. And then other vendors come along and fill the gaps below Apple, and ideas churn out from there that go back up and Apple incorporates them into their products. So you get sort of both ends of the market.
Yeah.
And Apple doesn't have, when they say we don't know how to make a cheap laptop, they really mean that. They sincerely don't know how to make a laptop that to them exemplifies what they feel should be in an Apple product. But at the same token, the ideas in the Apple version will show up in the HP version, the Dell version, the Lenovo version, and really good ideas in Android phones and Windows phones will show up in iOS, and that way both ends of the market benefit.
Do you guys feel like this is a different Apple from the Apple that said the computer for the rest of us? I feel like in the early days of Apple, there was this sense, it certainly Woz had this sense of, let's make the Apple to be a democratizer. We had Lee Felsenstein on yesterday.
It was so expensive,
one of the great computer designers. It always was expensive, but it was always, the idea was, it was a lot cheaper than a mainframe. The idea was,
it was
your first personal computer for the rest of us. The idea was to democratize computing power.
I don't know.
When
I think of democracy.
I think that's absolutely true. Because I was looking at a while ago, as a matter of fact, I was looking at the original plans for the first Mac were to create something that was less than $1,000.
Yeah, Jeff Raskin's ideas.
Yeah. I mean, basically, and of course, the first Apple was $666. Of course, you had to add things like a case, a keyboard. Right. I don't know, but little creature comforts that people seem to like if they want to do more than just run power through something. the more I thought about it, the more I realized that it's the iPad that really is the current articulation of that. Because here you have a computer that costs way under $500. It's more. It's so personal that, I mean, you are you are overwhelming it. You're engulfing it, so to speak, as you're using it. Although I will always wish that Apple finds a way to create a really good $600 or $700 laptop, I can't deny that they've created a wonderful, powerful device that a lot more people are able to afford at a price point that is not in any means ridiculous. I mean, it's a luxury. The iPad mini is a luxurily built device, but it's not at a luxury price. It's just a little bit more expensive than an Android tablet you can get for the same
size. One of the things I think is interesting is the longevity. You know, my iPad 1, like the original iPad or whatever, died a couple weeks ago. Like the top half of the screen stopped working. But that was a hard life.
My kids
were
it was like the Bluesmobile. It just disintegrated. So I've taken you as far as I can go, Alex.
Road salt
is hell on iPads.
Yeah. But it was, you know, it had two kids that, and when my daughter started playing with it, she was less than 2 years old. So, you know, it was two of that age using it,
pounding it, whatever.
And I think that's part of Apple's problem with the iPad is that because they're not people, you know, aren't utilized. It's so. It lasts like I have all the generations laying around the house because I buy them for the show and I look at them and everything else. And then my kids just take them over. Like I'm too old for an iPad. I kind of feel like, you know, like I still need my laptop. But I do find myself using my laptop less and less. And, but my kids, I mean, that's just they're kind of the water that they're
iPad 2 is still the most popular, I think.
Is it? Yeah. Well, Apple sold that for the longest. But that's part of it, right?
Also because of bulk purchases. That's the blister pack iPad for schools and racks.
Yeah. I mean, when they say computer for the rest of us, I don't think that means a cheap computer by any means. Mm-hmm. Although you compare that with the cost of computing power at that time, it wasn't vastly out of the range of other computers. But it wasn't about money. It was just about democratizing it.
Well, but I think when you look at the age range.
They're not a democratic company anymore.
But when you look at the age range of an iPad, from 2 years old or less to, you know, at any range. I mean, I just see people in the airport all the time with these. Yeah. You know, and the thing is, you just see people just comfortably using it as
their interface. Do you get what you're paid for with Apple gear? I mean, the $1,000 iPhone 6, in terms of quality, I'm not talking about, you know, the kind of ineffable, I have an iPhone. But in terms of quality and durability, reliability.
Look at how many old iPhones you still – like I was walking through I forget where it was. It was a giant conference center a couple of weeks ago, and I saw tons of iPhone 4, 4Ss that people were still busily using, you know, as their main phone.
Well, that's a testament to the lack of low-cost iPhones more than anything else.
Well, but also the durability because those phones broke after a year or two.
Well, but maybe they bought it last year.
I think the biggest thing is the battery, and I think it depends on how you charge it and everything else. But I think that
is what dies.
What kills us, we're about to replace all of our iPhone 5s, I think, that are in the office, specifically because the batteries are all dying. They can't. They're not holding charge anymore. So that's the issue.
Renee's absolutely right. I mean, you can imagine how many phones I get through my office, and not all of them are requested back because they make 80 million of them. And, you know, they'd rather not even just the money they would spend on tracking them and making sure they get back.
Yeah.
Sometimes not worth it. And so I'm just amazed by the amount of times that I will fire. So I keep some of these in my library for reference later on. And I'm amazed at how many times I'll like fire up like a 2-year-old or 3-year-old Android phone that may have had less than 100 hours of uptime. And it's just dead, either because of a battery issue or because of something like that. I don't think that the builds are bad by any means, but I compare that to all my own personal old iPhones, where if I wanted to do a photo test comparing the original version 1 iPhone, my personal one that I carried around everywhere for a year or two, to the latest one, I have absolutely no fear whatsoever that as soon as I can find a 30-pin dock connector in my pile of cables, it will fire up. It will launch right away.
Well, you saw me a couple of weeks ago. We had the original iPod.
Right.
Charged it up.
Okay,
it
worked. That one
played music.
For mine, it's a hard drive issue. I'm sure that if I wanted to
get that
2001 iPod. I mean, that thing is
But to that point, the only comment I would say, just to put another dimension to it, is that I do, to answer your question, I do think that Apple builds things beautifully and handsomely. And I can complain about maybe the keyboard on this is flatter than I would like, but I can't complain that it's a poorly made keyboard. It's just beautifully made, made for the ages. The difficulty with the way that Apple does things is just that they make $70,000 Audis. And if you really just need a $21,000 Toyota that's certainly not built as well and doesn't have the same sort of performance and engineering and is not as forward looking, that's too bad because they only make $70,000 Audis. And there are a lot of people they just need a really well made $600 laptop, of which there are a great many in Windows space.
Here's a little tip, by the way, Alex. You might want to watch Malachi closely. A UK store owner. Named Mohammed Shuga, has a very smart 7-year-old son who watched...
I have that problem, too.
Who watched his father enter the Apple ID and password in the iPad, and he decided to give himself an early Christmas present. He bought some Dino Bucks from the game Jurassic Park. Turns out he spent $5,000 between December 13th and 18th on Dino Bucks for Jurassic Park.
They did give him the money back.
Yeah,
after some
65 transactions, $2,000 in 1 hour.
It's actually one of one of the biggest features that I really enjoy about my phone or my iPad is actually the biometric, because my son and my daughter will sit there and try to watch me put my code in, because that's like the magic kingdom for them. There's like this game, like if I order a new movie, they all have to leave the room and I type this thing. And now I just open up my remote. When they updated it, I just open up the remote on my phone and I can just type it in and they can't see it. But I still have to like turn it away from
them. It's probably a smart
idea. Make sure
that
they don't see it because it is like they definitely want that password because they know that then they could be like buying stuff and
Mohammed found out about it when his credit card, he was trying to buy some stuff for the store, his credit card was declined. He called up, they said, did you know that you have 60 plus transactions totaling £3,911?
Yeah,
And he says, I was so mad. I'm 32 years old. Why would Apple think I'd be spending thousands of pounds on buying dinosaurs and upgrading a game?
There's people with problems.
Apple support team said there's no guarantee you get a refund, but they did eventually refund all his money. And he says from now on, he hopes Apple does something to ensure no other parents ensure have the same.
I
they
say,
got sued over this.
That's a wetware
They changed
problem.
How that worked. It's a wetware problem. It's not an Apple's problem.
But the credit card company didn't decline the charges either.
My bank's app has lots of wonderful features where I can. There are like 8 different settings in my mobile app that say, please send me a text alert whenever an expense, whenever someone charges more than X dollars. Please send me a text alert whenever a charge comes from overseas. And it's just wonderful. Do you think that it's maybe time for Apple to have those, at least make the option of saying anytime that there is more than X dollars worth of purchases made, 1 24-hour period, just send me if someone sends the password, let it go through, but let me know what that happens.
We have a corporate, our corporate cards are with Bank of America. This morning, I spent $10 on Steam, and I hear Lisa go, did you just buy something on Steam? Bank of America has canceled your credit card. And this has been a continuing problem. I guess Steam might be a sort. Steam is right. Game engine from Valve. I guess because we had called Steam and said, no, we buy stuff with this credit card on Steam. We called Bank of America and they said, okay. And then immediately, $10.
This is the sort of problem that Apple's not serious about thinking about opening a bank, but when you talk about going into a new market, this is like when you go into a new market, but even a poorly run bank has been in business for decades. And I had a great experience with my bank where I made New York Comic Con. My first stop off the train was at the ATM across the street. I took out the cash that I thought I would be spending on like prints and posters and everything. And then the ATM said, no way, no effing way. And by the time, I'm like, ah, damn it, they probably think, okay. And by the time I turned around, I got an alert on my phone saying, hi, someone tried to take an absurd amount of money off an ATM in New York. Is that okay? And then as soon as I did, I got another bet. Okay, that's fine. Just wanted to check. We have now unlocked your account.
I like it when they do that. That's not what B of A does.
That's not an inconvenience. That's like you are doing your job.
That's
Thank
right.
You
no, I want from
B of A. That happened after a lot of complaints and a lot of pain.
Of course, I used an American Express card in the Bahamas to buy $100 worth of pictures of me with dolphins. Nobody said anything. So, maybe they know. And no, that's what bad guys don't do, is buy pictures of themselves with dolphins. But hey, let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about Alex Gibney's Steve Jobs biography. It aired for the first time on CNN. I don't know if you all watched it or not. If you didn't, then there'd be nothing to say. So quickly watch it while I'm talking about LegalZoom. You have 2 hours. I watched it on the plane back because, you know, we're on Virgin America, right, and they have DirecTV, and
right,
I'm watching it. It was awesome. Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom. Get your life organized today. Your estate planning. I have estate planning advice for you. Whether you need a will or a trust, LegalZoom can help you do what you need to do. If you have a family, even if you don't, if you just have assets, you don't want the government, the courts, to determine what happens to those assets if something happens to you. You don't want the courts to decide what happens to your children if something happens to you or your pets. LegalZoom's estate plan bundles make this easy. They eliminate the guesswork. You don't have to figure out on your own whether a will or a living trust would be the best. You can actually talk to an independent attorney. LegalZoom's pre-negotiated low prices with attorneys in almost every state. They'll walk you through their options, recommend an estate plan that offers the best solutions to fit you. And it's easy. They're not a law firm. LegalZoom's not a law firm. So it's efficient. It's the high value. And you can talk to a lawyer. So it's like the best of everything. On your schedule, on your terms. And you will know up front what it's going to cost. You don't have to worry about hourly rates or getting a bill next month. I love this. That's how LegalZoom has become the leader in helping small business owners, families, people like us with their legal needs. You can get legal help and walk away feeling great. LegalZoom.com. And we'll give you $10 off your estate plan bundle when you use the offer code MBW at checkout. This is something everybody needs to do. Lisa just did hers. It's nice. They sent her a pack, a whole kit. It was really great. I was very impressed.
I'm going to test it this year.
I have to. My patents. Will is really old, and I'm really old. So that's a bad
the will, confluence. And then also, I've always wanted to write a patent. And so I was
they do that.
I got a whole bunch
they
of
do patents.
I saw it. So
you know what you want to do?
I got a lot of them.
Tell us.
No, I'm not going to tell you.
That
immediately invalidates it. It takes all the fun out of it.
LegalZoom.com. Don't forget the offer code MBW. You will save $10 on checkout. You can do it on your patent, too. It doesn't have to be on family planning. So did any of you see the Steve Jobs? Nobody did.
No. I should have last night.
It was good. A couple of people tweeted me saying, oh, yeah, it was a hit piece. Of all of the things I've seen on video things I've seen on Steve Jobs, it was the most complete, most thorough, and fairly balanced. It doesn't compete with Walter Isaacson's book or Becoming Steve Jobs, the Rick Tetzley book, which I think is excellent. But it's many of those same stories. Where people, I think, got a little upset with it, towards the end, they focus on the options dating scandal. They focus on...
no one really cares about.
Well...
Who cares?
The government cared. And Fred Anderson, who took the fall, this Apple CFO who took the fall, cared.
Which is unfortunate.
$2.5 million fine to him. They talk about all the kind of at the last minute negative things that happened. The antitrust action because of Apple's agreements with other companies not to poach employees. Yeah. And so it kind of felt like a little bit of a hit piece. But on the other hand, I think it was very balanced about Lisa, his daughter. Although here's an interesting tidbit I'd never heard before. They interviewed Chris Ann, who was Steve's girlfriend. He had a baby with her. As they were breaking up, she got pregnant. For a long time, denied it. Eventually, a paternity test proved he was the father. This right at the same time as Apple went public, and he was worth several hundred million dollars, and he had agreed to give her $500 a month. But one of the things that Chris Ann tells the story, she said, when I found out I was pregnant, we talked about what to name the baby, Steve and I. She said, this is not somebody who is denying paternity, except he did in court. But in person with me, we were talking about, and he said, I want to name her Claire. And Chris Ann said, no, I don't like that. For some reason, I don't want that name. And they decided Lisa. But she said, I figured out later that he had actually had a computer he wanted to call for Claire. And that's why he wanted to name Lisa. And so name her Claire. And then when they changed to Lisa, he had to rethink the retronym for Lisa. I don't know if that's true or not. That's the only thing out of that whole 2-hour documentary
right.
that I had never heard before.
Yeah.
Everything else is the stories you know and you've heard before. But I thought that was interesting that he wanted to call it the Claire. I'm glad he came up with Lisa.
Lisa sounds better.
So none of you have seen this.
I haven't.
I would see it if it's worth seeing. We know the story.
I don't get CNN. The funny thing about the Apple TV is all the stupid like registration stuff. Because I don't have
yeah.
TV. You know, I have a really fast internet connection from Comcast, and every time you want to like, so I'm buying like I pay for HBO and I pay for Showtime, but I don't think there's any way to pay for CNN. They want you to go and show that you're a TV subscriber.
I feel like you can see it somewhere else. Yeah, CNN paid some of the money to produce it.
Watch it on BitTorrent.
It's on Sling? Oh, yeah. CNN, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that you can get the DVD. And I feel like the movie played in theaters a little bit.
Yeah, it was released.
It was at South By.
A qualifying run.
Yeah. And this was one of the movies that Tim Cook was complaining about that he felt like was exploitative. It was interesting because it starts with Steve's death. And they show the tributes at the Apple store. They show Al Gore talking about Steve at the funeral. And Gibney, who narrates the film, said, I wanted to figure out why we all felt so bad when Steve passed. What was it? And then he goes back and kind of follows the story. He doesn't spend a lot of time with Steve's hippie years. Does interview Woz. There's some Woz in it. A lot of old footage I'd not seen, which was fun. Kind of random found footage. It's, you know what? It's part of your collection. He did the documentary on Scientology Going Clear, which was quite good. Gibney. Yeah.
He gets a free pass for coverage on his next three projects for having done that.
I thought that was so good.
It was a really good documentary.
And he must have been doing this at the same time as he was doing the Steve Jobs documentary, because they came out very close together, within a year of each other. Anyway, I think of all the things I've seen about Steve, certainly all the movies I've seen about Steve, it's the most complete portrait of him. It shows the good and the bad. The interview, Bob Belleville, who was the... who was kind of responsible for manufacturing the Macintosh and was there for about 4 years. He says, you know, he was crying about Steve passing, but he says it was also the worst 4 years of my life. He said, every day was a nightmare. And he went to Japan with Steve many times. And so it was, I think for those interviews, it was interesting. Anyway, nothing more to say because you didn't see it.
That's always interesting, though. There are a lot of projects like that where people will say that's the work that I'm most proudest of happened during this period. I would never, ever, ever go back and do it again. To me, I always think about the deluxe Laserdisc edition of The Abyss by James Cameron, where they got interviews with the entire cast like 10 years later. That was the movie where it was set in an undersea drilling platform, and he actually built an underwater set, and all the cast had to spend like 12 hours a day for months scuba diving, and all of them said the exact same thing, like, that I will never I hated it. It was terrible. I will never do it again. It was one of the greatest movies I've ever made in my entire life.
Yeah,
because I never thought I did. He got me to do things I never thought were possible.
Yeah.
And so that's, if for that alone, that's a hell of a leader.
See, Belleville said, you know, I lost my wife because we got divorced in that time. I lost my family. I lost my health. There he is. But at the same time, he's crying when Steve's gone. And he reads his eulogy for Steve. And it's that same thing. It's kind of these mixed feelings about it. It's the greatest work I'd ever done. He made the Macintosh. He did the manufacture for the Macintosh.
It's fascinating when you have someone in their 40s or 50s or 60s, and they are evaluating this person that is not them in their 20s and 30s.
Right.
And with an extra 20, basically, if you were to present me with, here is Andy Natko of age 23, and here's the stuff that he was doing at that time, I could see this as if I was evaluating just someone I was reading about.
It's true,
in the third party, and
it
gives you an extra set of clarity. Yeah. There was a time where I had to see every single interview with every single Apollo astronaut ever done.
Right.
And there are times where you have like Al Shepard and Gene Cernan, and you see these people who are now like in their 60s and 70s, and you see in their voice the stories that they probably told 100,000 times about how, and then, you know, they suddenly said, well, what if we were to send Apollo 8 around the moon instead? And I know that the command module has never been that far away before. And whereas when in their 40s, they might have told the story with a certain amount of daring, yes, of course, let's do that. You can really see in their voices, like someone who's 30 years older was like, what a fool that person. What an idiot. He would never have seen his grandchildren. He would never see his children grow up. He took that incredible risk. And why the hell did he do that?
One of the things I realized watching it is I don't care, you know, whether it's biased or not. I don't care if it's wrong. You know, I and this, I think, is a manifestation of what a difference Steve made in our lives. I want to see everything. I want to read it all. I want to see it all. And I just, it's a pleasure to see him at work. And they show a video from his last appearance, which was to introduce iCloud. They show, I mean, whatever you're feeling about the slant of the documentarian, and I don't think it was particularly slanted, it's just great to see Steve again. By the way, the other place to go, yeah, Magnolia and CNN produced it. The other place to go is folklore.org, which is Andy Hertzfeld's. We've mentioned this many times, his Andy Hertzfeld site, where he puts together anecdotes from many of the original Macintosh teams. And you can read the real story as well.
But, and he would move very fast. I mean, I think that one of the things is with anyone like this to make a decision, you know, make decisions very quickly. I remember when the Mac came out along, you know, when the new iMac, the iMac came out, you know, I sent him an email, I sent Steve an email and I said, what do you think of this? And I got this quick email back like 3 minutes later saying, tell me more. Huh. So then I wrote this long thing about, let's have all this. And I within like 3 days, I was in meetings with Apple.
That's pretty impressive.
because I hit some vein that he was interested in. Didn't turn out, but it was one of those things that you could tell that, you know, he's making decisions very quickly and then passing them off, and it was a really good lesson in, you know, in that process. Yeah.
Well, there's also some great stories about the early Mac team and how Steve kind of reigned by chaos. You know, and he said, I think this is Belleville again. He said, you know, at any moment, you know, Steve could throw a grenade into everything. And, you know, I mean, it was just chaotic. And that was one of the things that was so... He said, I have PTSD still. great. I think worth watching. I recommend it if you get a chance to see it. And I'll be interested to hear what you all think of it. What are we going to think about what Apple has to release in 2016? We know that there will undoubtedly be a new iPhone. They've been very consistent yearly since 2007. There are rumors coming around about the iPhone 7, things like, for instance, 256 gigabyte memory option.
256 and a larger battery, and I'd be immediately – I usually go every other year. I don't usually do every year, but those are the two things. Like, you give me a more storage and more battery time, and I would immediately upgrade.
Yeah, larger batteries are tough. A lot of people ask for them, but whenever I talk to engineers, the first thing they say is that people do not understand battery geometry and that the more you put in, it's not a linear curve. You don't for the amount of battery you add, you don't get that much
more battery.
So there's
an optimal kind of size of the battery?
Yeah, it's like balancing out a sensor and a camera. You want to make sure everything works, because batteries, they keep in heat, so the bigger the battery, the more you have to ramp down the processor, for example. They're not radio transparent, so it can interfere with the signal. Also, they're heavy, and Apple believes, they truly believe, that the lighter the phone or the tablet is, the easier it is to use. You can hold it up longer for web browsing or watching video or reading. And if phones get heavy, and I've got a bunch of heavy Android and Nokia phones here, you just, and even the iPhone 6 Plus and 6S Plus, for me, it's uncomfortable to hold reading for long periods of time. So their goal is to make those as light as possible. And they figure that by making a light phone, you can add a battery case, you can add a rugged case, you can add all these things. But if they build those in by default, you can't tear them off if you don't need them. So you're always stuck with that extra stuff, even if it's not necessary to your use case. So some people use an iPhone. My best friend has an iPhone 6S, and he has 40% battery life left every day. Yeah. So he would never need a bigger battery. I might, so I either get the 6S Plus or I get the battery case. So that's one of those problems that, from an engineering standpoint, like, I understand the feeling, but from an engineering standpoint, it's a challenge to balance all those needs.
I have to say, I brought only one phone with me. It was a 6S Plus, and it did a great job. There was, you know, the day we went to Disney World, where we left early and we stayed late, it got down to 10%. I turned on battery saver, got me all the way home. That phone is an amazing beast.
They're doing everything they can with it.
It's probably just the way I use it or whatever I use. Because my phone...
A lot of it has to do with radios. So if you're, you know, in a weak signal area, it can hunt, and it can really kill your battery life.
Right, because I just know that I'm charging mine all the time. It feels like I'm charging it all the time.
Anything plus? Yeah. It's a plus?
No, I have. I moved back to the 6.
Oh, well, that's why.
The 6S.
Yeah, no, I agree. The 6, the smaller one, is less... Yeah. Is much less...
I just didn't like the size.
Anything that radiates costs power.
Give me the size so I can have better battery life. So
my hand
that is part
of
the rumors that there will be. I don't know if the size of the phone will change, but there will be a 256 gig storage option and a larger battery. They did shrink the batteries very slightly for the S.
They had to fit the taptic engine in this generation.
But they'll get that back with the headphone, right?
Yeah, I keep fantasizing that there'll be a day where I can skip a year, and I always end up having to get the new one because it's just that they did it to me this year with the 3D Touch.
Mm-hmm. I skipped it. I skipped the 5S. I went from the 5 to the 6.
I have yet to have been able to skip. And I did poo-poo 256 gigabytes. I thought, nobody will ever need that. Then I looked at my phone, 128 gigabyte phone. Mm-hmm. I got 4 gigs left. I thought, maybe I do need that.
Yeah, again, it's strange use cases. Like my mom, she has a 64 gigabyte phone, and she's used 8 gigabytes on that for the last 2 years. And
it depends on how many photos,
Virgil
video,
and our chat room asks an interesting question. What if they went to lighter materials? Instead of metal, they used carbon fiber, for instance.
They could. So a lot of this, again, is balance. Like, for example, the reason they went to 7000 series aluminum in the current iPhones and the stronger screens is partially to offset everyone now pressing on their screen for 3D Touch.
Right.
And that you don't want a phone that's going to start collapsing.
Plus the nitwits on YouTube who bend the damn thing.
Well, they started the 7000 series way before the people started bending them on YouTube.
All right.
I mean, they had this feature planned out for 3 years.
Curse you, YouTube benders.
That was a nice side effect.
They did add weight and structural,
Yeah, they're willing to add weight when they believe the feature set is more important than the weight that they're adding. It's like when they went to Retina, that added weight.
They're not going to try to make it thinner again, are they?
The thinness is a side effect of reducing weight. So if they can pull material out of it and make it lighter, by definition, it becomes thinner.
But they don't say the lightest iPhone we've ever made. They always say...
Well, lightness doesn't sell. Like, you tell people iPhone. What they want to understand. And Apple's not the thinnest phone. There's tons of thinner phones that nobody complains about.
Right. I don't care about thinness.
I don't care about
make
thinness.
It thicker and give me a bigger battery. Look thank you.
This is, I don't care about weight.
Just
Merlin
Renee,
Man.
Just rest it on something. You don't have to hold it to read.
Also, well, I mean, and one-handed ease of use.
You put it in something like this, then, and then there goes your. Right. I think the only value of thinness is that by the time you put the case on it that you want to put on, instead of it being this thick, it's just this thick. But I think I've no problem with thinness until you find out that okay. Apple, we're going to sit down. I know that we've scheduled 30 minutes for this briefing, but we're going to spend 28 of it you convincing me that the reason why the iPhone 7 does not have a headphone jack is not because you just wanted to make it thinner. And begin.
Well, you can look because the jack is not the thinnest part on that phone. I think the lightning is not
I'm saying it's like when you start deleting things because you could have made
for
this
thinness.
Just
Yeah.
The 3.5 is volume. It takes that jack is long and it goes significantly into the phone, so it takes up a lot of volume.
As long as we're talking about rumors, let's talk about the March rumor, the March announcement rumor. Still credible that they would announce the Apple Watch 2 and a new 4-inch iPhone in March?
According to the interview on 60 Minutes, they've got 2 and 3. They're already working on them. Remember that was one of the.
Did they say that?
Yeah, Tim Cook said.
Well of course. The question is when they're going to. Yeah, when they're going to.
Seems like
fly.
The right rabbit.
I think the March events are back.
I did wear and I as much as I've poo-pooed the Apple Watch, I also wore this the whole time, and a couple of valuable things. Watching my steps was great because I know one day in the Disney World, they had 18,000 steps. I walked 9 miles.
Right.
Wow.
And that's nice. You know, that's a nice thing to know. I used it a lot for the calendar because I was trying to keep track of where we had to be, when, and all that stuff. That was handy.
It's great for 2-factor alerts when you reset everything.
Yeah. Well, all right, maybe a new Apple Watch. I feel like it's too soon, but if they can make a massive improvement,
the thing is, it's not for us, Leo. It's not for people who bought the first Apple Watch. It's for people they haven't yet convinced to buy an Apple Watch. It's the same as like the iPad.
But what about us? Aren't we going to feel bad?
Well, we can skip generations. Like we're not normal people. Like the average person who bought an Apple Watch is happy with it for a couple of years.
Right.
Otherwise, people are like, it's missing this or that. I'm going to wait. And then they see the Apple Watch 2. They go, okay, this is the one I'm going to buy.
Right.
Well, and this is specifically why I bought the Sport. Was because I was like, I'm going to want to keep buying these with the, because we're going to cover it in the show and I'm going to want to have it and I'm not going to, and there was no feature difference other than I put a cover on it and I put stuff around it to keep it protected. And,
you said you wanted a smaller phone. Would you go to a 4-inch iPhone?
I might. I think it might be too small. I think I'm getting too old for smaller than what I have. but I think that,
this rumor comes from a allegedly leaked roadmap from China Mobile. That
China Mobile has no roadmap for us.
Yeah, and a colorful, smaller, possibly less expensive for the Asian market, maybe.
The challenge is that we've associated, like, the iPhone 6 Plus is $100 more expensive. So people assume the iPhone 6 Minus will be $100 cheaper. And then how do you make a phone that has, you know, really modern internals and sell it for $100 cheaper?
New MacBooks? I would love to see a new MacBook. I love my MacBook.
It needs Skylake so badly. That Broadwell chip is not
happy. It would be nice to have it be faster. Is it for battery life or speed that you want the new chip?
Just power, power over efficiency, because I get great battery life already, but it's just not, the Core Y is not powerful enough.
It needs a little more.
It sees my iPad Pro walk by and it cries, Leo. Just cries.
Yeah.
I guess you see a computer with a modern CPU and like just modern design. When I got my new MacBook this year, it's like I had forgotten that this model has about a 12-hour battery in it.
I know.
And when you get locked into like a mindset where, If I leave the house with a bag full of charged devices, I will not even have to care about finding a power outlet. It was a little bit disturbing using the original MacBook. Excuse me, the 20. I still don't know. Give things names, please. if you just call it the MacBook, I have to call it the 2015 MacBook.
That's what they call it. Nothing. They call it the late spring 2015 MacBook.
Again, it's like calling a documentary the house. I'm never going to be able to speak of it or find it. But when I was using that and realized that it's not that 6 hours is a puny amount of time, but you are used to with my iPad, I'm just used to having infinite. Almost
10 everywhere. Hours is virtually infinite, I think. Good enough.
What I really like is I don't now I could almost use a Chromebook for it, which I have, but I don't. But I still like some of my Mac apps and stuff like that. But for the little MacBook that I have, I don't have anything personal on it. So I don't, mail doesn't run. There's nothing else on it. And so that becomes my real travel one. Like I put it in a little satchel and I don't want to, you know, and I can just have it with me if I want to do something like that, but I don't have to, because my iPad actually has enough personal stuff on it that I'm a little more sensitive to it. This one is literally like my little shuttle. If I'm going to go out and work in a coffee shop and someone steals it, you know, I'll be bummed. I mean, I'm going to be upset about the thing, but I won't. I'm mostly interested in the information on my computer, you know, and the fact that it syncs up with everything else makes it really nice. I'm using Google Docs and, you know, everything else, but I stay in the cloud and don't leave anything on the computer, and it just makes it
I'm kind of a fan easier. Of the Chromebook, yeah, I like to be honest with you.
I like the Chromebook, too. I don't – again, for me, it's Mac apps that I use a lot that aren't on the Chromebook, which keeps me from using
You're a pro. That's why. Hmm? I'm an amateur.
I just think the Chromebooks are just absolutely brilliant because it gets to – I think it's great. If you're trying to make a PC, an actual laptop for less than $300, even less than $250, you really have to say, no, it can't be powerful enough to run Windows because that's just too much of a load for it. And so it's just such a great solution to a bunch of problems. Windows 10 notebooks are pretty good, but, I mean, just the speed of a machine that basically has to do nothing more than, well, I was about to say then display web pages, really. But when you talk about the amount of JavaScript that web ads load, okay, so we're still talking about 8 cores minimum. But
all right, Renee, must have in the back of your head something amazing that Apple's going to release this year. Anything?
Well, I mean, they released two new products and two new app stores last year, so I think, you know, it's not going to be new amazing stuff this year. It's going to be the year where they try to make everything they released last year
consolidation.
Better.
It'll be a consolidation year.
Okay. Like, again, like the iPhone was, well, iPod Touch, sorry, iPod was what, 2001, iPhone was 2007,
I'm going to predict
2010.
New amazing designer watch bands.
Or new materials. I mean, there's titanium, there's platinum, there's all sorts of things that they can do once they're in the watch space. And design, like Tommy Hilfiger or Michael Kors, there's a lot of potential there.
I think a Tommy Hilfiger Apple Watch is in your future.
Yves Saint Laurent. I mean, they got the Yves Saint Laurent team.
Yeah.
You have to figure out a way that we can charge more money just by sticking another logo on it.
Well, that's what they did.
No features, no new CPU, no new storage.
It's funny. Well, I laughed about the Hermes watch, and then I went to Hermes's website to fact check it. Well, no. So, like the Hermes Doubletour, the one that Apple sells, is around $1,000. The Hermes Doubletour without an Apple watch is like $3,000.
What? So Apple talked them down.
I mean, like if you want a Hermes Doubletour, it's a bargain.
Basically, you thought it was pretty uncalled for that Apple was kicking you in the nuts until you went to the store. Actually, Hermes will kick you in the nuts three times. So that's like a savings of two kicks in the nuts.
It's a designer nut kick.
How about
leave such a wonderful logo in the bruise.
I think it's time for Apple to update the MacBook Air with some influence of the MacBook. So I'd love to see Type-C. By the way, two Type-Cs, Apple?
The Air, like, or the Pro, because the Air might go away in favor of the
You think the Air will go away? And they'll,
yeah, I think
they'll,
eventually.
They'll professionalize or upgrade the MacBook to be the thin and light. It does seem like they don't really
need that. The Air replaced the original MacBook.
Yeah,
this will replace the Air.
And the MacBook Pro, I think, is still the 13-inch MacBook Pro, as you're saying, Andy, is still a fantastic machine.
Yeah. I mean, when you're talking about, again, we get back to the difference between making devices for a subset of the people out there and having to make a device for everybody. And the 13-inch notebook that has a real keyboard, that has an assortment of ports, that has a big battery, and has at least the possibility that you can do more stuff with it a year from now than it comes out of the box, that's still the meat and potatoes of the industry. I mean, Apple still has the old CD, DVD drive MacBook with a Retina screen on the price list because people still need to have those things. And so if they weren't selling them, if they weren't meeting a need, Apple would not make them anymore. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's going to take maybe another year or two for Intel to ship the right chips and the right quantities.
Yeah.
But I think that there's a red laser dot like on the swimming on the forehead of the MacBook Air that, you know, the target is in sight. They're just awaiting orders to pull the trigger.
Pricing, they got to get the price down because the MacBook Air starts at $900 now, and they need something at that category.
Whither the Mac Mini?
No, I don't think so.
It'll get a bump. It'll get whatever chipset.
We use a lot of Mac Minis. Oh my God.
You're the only one.
I don't think so. So anything that you want to rack mount, anything that you want to rack mount that uses a Mac, unless you really want to turn those, we have a couple of them that unless you really want to turn the garbage cans on their side and turn, you know, you can put, I think, two or three of them across. The Mac Minis
are. Do you think they're selling any more garbage cans at all?
I don't know. We don't use them that
heavily.
What's
the sales rate on the garbage can?
I think they're kind of.
It's not good.
No, I mean.
They need the new processors and they need the 5K.
I literally have one. It is literally now a doorstop.
Yeah, I don't.
Which is embarrassing, but I don't know what else to do with it. Yeah. Don't call me and write me and say, send it to me, Leo.
We actually had issues with performance with them.
I did too.
So it's unreliable. They just weren't. They weren't.
I replaced it with a 5K iMac and I couldn't be happier.
And we replace it. We still find for online stuff like Hangouts and Skype or whatever, we found that the Retinas were working better than than the trash can. And so we stopped, you know, so the trash cans are used for editing, but that's what they're mostly used for.
15-inch MacBook Air? No. Do you think 15-inch MacBook?
14-inch MacBook?
14-inch. Why not?
I'm just the idea of like make the MacBook Air super thin, but we'll also make it
17-inch.
My God, MacBook Air pizza box.
Actually, that's what this is, isn't it? It almost feels like it's
I did a screen share with my TV at home, and my daughter said, "Is that a giant iPad?" And she's just like, her 6-year-old daughter just like staring at it. She's like, "Is that it?" And I said, "No, that's just my iPad on the screen." She goes, she looks at me, she goes, "But wouldn't that be great?"
Wow.
You've really brainwashed those kids.
Just go up and touch the screen.
Wow. They stopped. This is the first TV that they have put fingerprints all over it because they didn't understand. You know, like when they were little, I had a they'd always hit the TV
right
and try to figure out why it wasn't.
Touch it. You know. Daddy, why doesn't the TV do pinch and zoom?
The touchscreen is broken.
I still zoom. And we just did it now. I was trying to zoom in on my YouTube video and Jason Kleanthis says, pinch it. No, it's YouTube. pinch it. Zoom
Here's
it.
The trackpad.
I have so many fingerprints on like the left and right sides of my MacBook right now, all because of the amount of time I spend working on my iPad Pro.
Well, I'm at the robot bar on this cruise ship on the Anthem of the Seas, and they have a robotic bar that mixes your drinks. And you're supposed to touch. You have a RF bracelet that the cruise gives you. They call it the Wow Band. And you're supposed to touch that to the tablet, which is, I'm sad to say, not an iPad, but some cheap Android tablet. And I keep touching it with the Apple Watch thinking, why doesn't this work? Why doesn't this work? I'm supposed to do it.
Darn it, Apple.
Well, and here's the question. So you have an Apple Watch. I have an Apple Watch. Andy, what are you using mostly?
Moto 360.
Moto 360.
I have one. I just don't wear it.
It depends on the phone you carry, right? If you carry an Android phone, you use the Moto 360. I'm the same way. And I wear an Apple Watch when I have an Apple
Watch. And Renee, you have an Apple Watch?
Yes.
Here's the big thing is that, and I, because it was a big choice for me. I had a really nice analog watch that I gave up, or semi-analog.
I have some very nice ones.
It costs a lot of money, more than my Apple Watch.
Yeah.
And I gave it up. And now the question is, would you regardless of the good and bad and everything else, would you ever go back to a regular watch from having
I can't live without notifications now. They've become central to my world.
It would seem so limited.
And I don't think
it's telling me the time and date. What good is that?
Brief, frequent, important interactions I've become dependent on.
And it changes the time. For me, I change a lot of time zones. It changes the time autom- You know, as soon as the you know, it changes
get
that.
Off the plane.
I have
that is a
notifications.
Nice feature, by the way. I forgot about that. That used to be a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
You get off the plane and you have to go, now it just knows.
There's something that I really noticed now that I've now had like pretty much every single device that will throw notifications on your wrist on my wrist. And I got to say that the simple fact that a device puts a notification on your wrist, that's 85% of the feature. That I appreciate that, for instance, Apple Watch, the notifications, they're cleaner, they're prettier, they have a little bit of animation about them. But that kind of appreciation for me goes away like after a few weeks. And it's the way that the Android Wear watch works that I appreciate more than
I agree with you,
than the Apple. And not only that, but if I couldn't afford to have a real smartwatch, just the Garmin Vivo Smart, which you can get for $110, $111, which is more like prominent than the Microsoft Band. It really does look like just a standard, you know, slim little black fitness band. It just has an OLED screen that lights up very, very, very subtly. Even that would be at least 65% to 70% to me, as useful as the core features of the Apple Watch. So it's not as easy as simply producing a device that's built 10 times better and works 10 times better. Again, it's you get back to the analogy I keep using all the time, which is for a lot of people, it's a Toyota Corolla. I put the key in, it starts, and once it starts and the car starts moving, I stop thinking about how good this car is. It's just there to get me from one place to another. And when you get people started on notifications, they may not really care about the digital stem, and they may not care about how it takes your pulse rate, so long as it takes your pulse rate and all this other sort of stuff.
I agree with you. Actually,
I can use anything. But it really was a factor in switching back to Android that I actually would rather use an Android Wear watch than an Apple watch.
Yeah,
and that's
no, I'm
one
with
of the
you.
Drivers for me to switch back.
Yeah. Are you gonna look at the Moto 360 Sport comes out Wednesday?
I'm gonna look at it
Thursday. I guess
there's so many things I really admire about the Apple Watch, and one of them is that I can't believe that. I really want to say if half of what I would say about how good the Apple Watch is just the brilliance of that watch, of that strap design, just the ability to. I've got here's the beautiful leather, legitimately beautiful leather band that came with my watch that didn't cost me an extra $150. But I mean, I would love to be able on a day where I know I'm going to be taking like a 5 or 6 mile walk, even just for that walk, just to simply swap it out with a plastic one. Right. So I don't like get this all coated with like stinky Andy salt.
But Andy, you and I are big guys, and I think that that's one advantage the Apple Watch has, at least, is that for smaller people and women particularly, I can't see a lot of women wearing Moto 360 watches. They're just too clunky.
Well, yeah, there is that. This is now this down to like the size of a large Apple Watch. I've seen this on.
Oh, I get the 46 millimeter. I like big because I'm a big guy. So
this is one of the reasons why I went out and bought this because this is like the perfect size. It was a bit of a. I got used to the larger size of the original Moto 360, but this now just feels like a regular watch on my list. I believe it feels even more like a regular watch than the Apple Watch does because it's just round. It's got more. The faces have more style.
I'm in a similar situation now. I'm looking forward to this sport version because it has built-in GPS. But now because of the battery life on the iPhone, I don't want to. So now I act like, oh man.
me,
I guess you could use this with an iPhone, but it's not the same.
What a great problem to have! So much choice and so many devices that work great that you like different things about.
Yeah, Dr.
Like
Mom
the integration
says. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I like the integration because the activities on my watch that I can check it on my phone as well. Apple Pay just shows up. Anything I have in wallet just shows up when I want to use it. It's not just notifications, but it's all the apps that use those notifications. So it just really takes my iPhone and like a little Imperial shuttle puts it on my wrist for what I need most.
That's really what
it's like
it
the
is.
Destroyer and then the shuttlecraft.
Dr. Mom says, as a woman, she wears the Asus Zen Watch 2, which is kind of thin and less clunky.
I like the fact that I can just, that my watch is there and watch TV and my phone's somewhere in the house and it rings and I can decide whether I'm going to go find my phone or not. Like I can hear the phone ringing and I'm like,
that's something.
No,
any smartwatch is going to do something like that, right? You can't answer, Andy, you can't answer the watch, the call on your Android Wear watch, only on the iPhone.
You can't. Android Wear does support that if it has a microphone and a speaker. You can answer it on the phone. You can answer it on the watch. You can't
use
this model. You can't talk, have a conversation, right. But you can basically answer it and then or
I can't hear you. I can't hear you. Talking to my watch, but I can't hear you.
If you got like the WeiWei watch, right. For instance, which is also 42 millimeters,
that has mic in it. Okay,
that has a speaker and a mic, so you can do the whole thing.
I think that's one advantage that Android Wear has over Apple is the diversity of the ecosystem. In fact, Huawei has just announced a women's version of its watch. Yeah. The Huawei Jewel. This is at CES. The Huawei Jewel and Elegant. Wow. So
I never want to answer the phone on it because
the new pink is like it used to be that, oh, and we made a ladies version of this toolbox, right. Too, and you just spray paint
ladies like jewels.
I think the new version is you just glue a whole bunch of fake diamonds.
There's a new Fitbit Blaze announced today too that looks like a hexagon shape.
Oh, that's interesting.
They promise, I think, a couple of days of battery life.
A couple of days doesn't
Last year, LG started shipping in quantity actual like batteries that are shaped kind of like a home plate base. So now to satisfy the market of watchmakers who don't want to make square watches, so
they do a lot. This Blaze does look a lot like an Apple Watch, I have to admit.
And the CEO, I think, was trash talking Apple when he introduced it. So
that doesn't work. Almost always a mistake. It is $200.
Yep.
Which is certainly an aggressive price point.
And Fitbit has been successful in the band market, at least.
Yeah. Have they? They have a variety of bands?
Well, they've been selling the Fitbit bands pretty well.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, the fitness bands. Yeah, they're the number one fitness product out there.
Not only that, but they'll probably get a lot of people who are stepping up from their... They'll move their Fitbit from their right wrist to their left wrist.
Right.
I just like that there's competition because it makes everybody better.
Yeah. Is this Android Wear? Do we know? Or is it...
I think it's Fitbit.
It's just Fitbit. It's a Fitbit OS. Huh. Connected GPS, color touchscreen, on-screen workouts,
GPS I'd like in the next Apple Watch because I think it would be nice.
Standalone GPS would be nice, yeah.
Yeah.
Although I suspect that's a battery killer and probably doesn't really get used all that much.
Yeah.
Well, it could be like the heart rate monitor where it's only ramped up if you specifically need it for some sort of, like the way the iPhone 3G sort of tried to manage it as much as it could.
Well, this integrates with Fitstar. That's interesting.
A lot of people have just so many different needs that they really don't, as great and as ambitious as the Apple Watch is, if they don't use those features or if they, it just doesn't speak to them. I mean, I was a little bit surprised. Obama was on Comedians in Cars getting coffee last week, and the point of view, the perspective of inside the car, you could see him prominently wearing a Fitbit Surge.
Oh, really?
On his wrist.
Oh,
and
really?
I would think that I've seen some really fancy analog watches. I imagine this is what he wears around the White House because they don't let him. I'm sure they don't let him wear it like off the grounds.
How many steps did I take between the residential quarters and the Oval Office?
Yeah.
Or what's pacing my heart? Pacing.
What's my heart rate while talking to Putin?
Yeah. Mr. President,
Lord of the House,
take a breath. Now this Blaze is very interesting. I think I might. When did they say when it'll be available? Comes in black, blue, or purple, but that's just the band. Yeah, this looks good. Ships in March, it says, $199, and I presume it works with an iPhone or an Android device.
Yes.
I would guess. And it says it does notifications. Smart notifications. See call and text notifications and calendar alerts on display. Auto sleep tracking, silent alarms, 5-day battery life. I love competition. I think this is the greatest thing in the
world. Absolutely.
You know? Yep. Now I think Apple will do a watch too.
Well, I think this is an area I think that they have to iterate quickly. You know, they're going to do something. They're going to learn. They're going to do another one. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw one every spring and fall for a while while they make sure that, because I think that otherwise they fall behind. This is
doing special editions for Chinese quickly. New Year. They announced, they quasi-announced that today. It's going to have special special gold and red Apple Watches for Hong Kong, Singapore, China.
Google announced a new Nexus 6P in gold. And yeah. guess who's that?
The markets are changing. But it's interesting because the Apple Watch is such a different product. The iPhone and iPad, famously, they were tablets and phones for 10 years before they made those. And this Apple didn't watch the experimentation phase. They entered it. And it's unusual to see Apple sort of experimenting along with everybody else.
Fitbit is doing bands, leather and link bands and so forth at an additional cost. This is a pretty, this is the market leader in fitness. And it makes sense that they would do something. Now I'm going to be challenged. I don't know what to get.
You have two wrists.
I got two wrists.
Yeah, you can have three watches per wrist. That's six watches easy.
There you go.
Okay, let's take a break. While I buy stuff. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace. Love Squarespace. In fact, I used the new cover page feature, relatively new. It's been out probably for a year. New to me. To make my leoville.com site really be kind of a great place, have a great welcoming portal. You can't just do the cover page. There it is. And it's a slideshow. It's a wedding picture, pictures of me with various hosts and stuff. So you can do just the cover page. But then it also links into my blog and my photos and my calendar. I haven't really gotten done too much with that yet. But I really feel like this is a great – there's me and Catherine Hall. It's a lovely way to create a presence for yourself on the web. And I have to underscore this, and I'm a big believer. You can have a presence on social media. You can have your LinkedIn profile and your Facebook and your Twitter profile. You have to have your own website as an individual, but especially as a business, because that's what you own. That's yours. That's something no one can take away from you. And the Squarespace is the best place to go to make that website. Very affordable. You also get a free domain name of your choice, so you can have your business's name.com or whatever. Squarespace also, by the way, will give you a 10% discount. I'll tell you how to do that when you use our offer code MacBreak. But the best way to do this is to go to squarespace.com and press that Start Now button. That'll give you, you don't need to give them a credit card, any personal information at all. Just give you 2 weeks to just try it and pick a template, customize it, make it feel like your site. These are, despite the fact they start with templates, I almost hate to say that because I think people think of the old way of doing it, these other sites where you had this site generator. Every site looked the same, not with Squarespace. Every site is unique. Well, look at mine. It was all done pretty much out of the box. And the reason is Squarespace kind of honors your aesthetic, and it makes it very easy for you. Now, of course, if you really want to get geeky, there are hundreds of settings, fonts, colors, page configurations. They do online typefaces, so you can choose beautiful typefaces. And every site will look unique very quickly. If you're a developer, they have a developer platform that lets you modify the CSS and the JavaScript and everything. But you're starting with a template that is literally state-of-the-art, as good as it gets. Professional designers, professional engineers making it as good as it gets. It's responsive, so it looks great on all screens. It's got e-commerce built into each and every site. They've got great 24/7 support. They have advanced plans for growing businesses. They have basic plans for somebody like me who just wants a blog. Whether you're a musician, a restaurant, if you're getting married, if you're having a baby, get started at squarespace.com. Costs you nothing. You don't even need to give them a credit card to try it free for 2 weeks. You can even import data from your existing site to really feel like what my new site's going to look like. And here's the deal. If you decide to buy, you'll get 10% off whatever you buy if you use the offer code MacBreak. So get a year or two. Get everything, stock up and you get 10% off. Squarespace. I love them. Build it beautiful at squarespace.com. Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Corps is in studio. Always nice to see you. Also with us, Renee Ritchie in Montreal from imore.com. Andy Anako in New England from the Chicago Sun-Times. We're talking about Apple Tech. I guess I could go over these court cases fast. There's a bunch of them. Complete victory for Apple. There was a class action lawsuit. Somebody sued saying iMessage was rigged not to deliver texts to Android phones. And any of us who have been using Android phones, who have used an iPhone or moved to Android from iPhone, have experienced this problem. Apple actually had to create a page, a site, so that you could de-link and all of that. However, the lawsuit claimed the company wiretaps Android users by intercepting, then stalling texts sent from iPhones to Android phones. The judge just summarily dismiss the case.
There's two piles on Tim Cook's desk. The message comes in. He just leaves it in the pile. He doesn't go to that second pile. Yeah. Never goes out again.
Let me see if I can find the...
the judge said, please stop smoking what you were smoking, and then we will move on.
Also, the plaintiff would have had a hell of a time trying to prove the case that, no, it's not because iMessage is fundamentally borked. I'm saying specifically there's a reason why messages weren't getting through.
One sentence decision from the judge. Part of the problem
was just reached over the giant clown hammer, just bonked the lawyer in the head with it.
Part of the problem came from the fact that two of the three plaintiffs had actually got rid of their iPhones only after they sued Apple. So, and then one of them asked to be dismissed as a named plaintiff. She said, "Yeah, never mind,"
because she realized how stupid it was. She didn't want her name connected to it.
Originally, she claimed her husband traded in her old iPhone when buying her a new Android. Then they went back and found out, no, that's not the case. And that's just the whole thing was a mess. It was buggy. And Apple did, you know, create a page to solve this problem. And, you know, I still get calls from people saying, you know, I've switched to Android and I get messages isn't working. Messages doesn't work well with Android.
Well, but I think that one of the most important things, one of the more important facts of this issue is that iMessage is kind of borked. You know, and so the thing
I mean,
is that
there's
like,
some
I don't,
merit to this.
Like, there's a handful of people that I text, you know, because they haven't responded to something else. But I don't use, I used to use iMessages all the time. In fact, when I had someone with an Android, when it came up green, you're like, ugh. You know, like,
I think the problem is Apple's almost encouraging people to use Facebook Messenger or some other solution.
Right. Because I use a mixture of Hangouts and Messenger and Telegram and Slack. You know, those are kind of like for different people and different social worlds. They all, those are kind of most of my communications. And then with my mom, I use iMessages. With my wife, I use iMessages. That's about it.
Would Apple ever really make iMessage a cross-platform solution? I mean, Hangouts works on both iPhones and everything.
It's not in their best interest. I mean, it locks people into Apple's platform. So it's
kind
it's,
of. But what it does is it's killing the product. I mean, you know,
that's
because,
what I think.
You know, it's
a side effect. That's not
I get the thought process, but it's not working.
Right. If you just use iMessage, so if you don't have a lot of people who use Android or other phones, then it works fine. The biggest problem with iMessage is that the security model, I don't know if it wasn't well thought out or not, but when you start switching between people using their Apple ID, for example, from an iPad, which is just an email address, their phone number, and maybe another phone number, the system they use to try to prove authentication and maintain privacy gets all messed up because it doesn't want to tell me it's Leo until it gets to my device, checks my address book, makes sure it's Leo, puts it on there. But then we're in group conversations and Leo's switching between his Android phone, his iPhone and his iPad, and it's trying to figure out. So then it spawns alternate conversations. And that I think is a side effect of trying to be too clever for your own good sometimes.
Apple, just not great at this. And
The problem with iMessage has always been that, just as Renee says, it tries to be clever and say, oh, let me figure out where you are and make sure it gets routed appropriately. When if you're just stupid and say, here are my account owner has said there are four devices that he or she has, I'm just going to ping all of them. And if they don't want to get messages on their iPad, then they're free to simply turn that off on the iPad.
Well, and one of the interesting things that I think is interesting about WhatsApp is that is which I use in Africa mostly, my complaint with it, of course, is that it's not attached to a specific operating system, but it is attached to a specific phone, which is, you know, why I don't use it very often, except when I'm there. And but it, from my understanding, as you're typing, it sends all that data over to their phone, and then it unlocks it when you say go, or it deletes it when you say stop. So it's already out as you're typing. And it makes it feel much more responsive than almost all the other ones because it's not sitting there like you hit the send and you don't know if it actually sent. As soon as you
finish
typing,
it was all based on BlackBerry.
Sorry?
It was trying to simulate a BlackBerry experience cross-platform. And they made it work very much like a BlackBerry. You used to see people typing and the message would just appear.
It's not appearing for them until you hit go. But so the message isn't appearing as you're typing, but it is getting it over to the phone. So as soon as you hit go, it immediately appears.
What I loved was the WebOS model where it basically, I forget the name for it, but they basically applied filters. They would just take all your stuff in. They would know exactly where you were on every service, and then they would provide a filter for you so you'd see all that stuff. It was all handled in the background, so the end user didn't have to care what device you were using. That was almost like a layer before the presentation layer. And I'm hoping iMessage can move to something like that where it just picks the stuff up, handles it, and then shows it to you, and you don't have to worry about what device you're on or where it's coming from.
Is there any recommended setting for messages that'll make it work better? Like, should I turn on send as SMS?
Is that the backup? You don't want to have it always sent as SMS, because then number one is...
Well, it says when I'm... The setting is says send as SMS when iMessage is unavailable.
Yeah, I always have that on.
I would leave it as sent as SMS, right? Yeah.
On my Apple Watch, that's the after the first major fail, I just said, do not use iMessage, send everything as an SMS.
Yeah. And then...
The problem you get into is the limitation, you know, all the limitations of SMS over... from when you're used to iMessage, you're used to a lot of things that you can send.
Like,
I don't care about being able to send a voice message through. I want the message to actually arrive.
Well,
it's just as simple as when someone is waiting for me for a breakfast meeting and I've hit construction traffic, I'm going to be 15 minutes late. I don't want the message to go to their Mac back in their office 25 miles away. I'm hoping that it will go to the phone that's on the table where they're waiting for me and wondering why I'm late.
Well, that's the other big problem, is because it will show you read delivered if any device attached to that account registers the message.
Oh, so I didn't know that.
If your iPad at home says, okay, we got this, it just shows it's delivered. And you're like, oh, they got it. And it may not necessarily have made it to the phone. And there's all these little things that, again, the model that they're using becomes and also, like, they believe in privacy, they don't want to keep it on their servers. It'll try to deliver for, I think it's 10 to 14 days, and that message just goes away. And if you turn on the phone, that message doesn't exist anymore, so you won't get it.
See, I'm more and more using Facebook Messenger. I use it all almost time. Don't even want to admit it, but most of the people, almost everybody, I mean, I would say, I don't know if friends have Android or iPhone, but I know who's on Facebook and who's not.
Right.
And most everybody I want to talk to is on Facebook.
I find that I don't really want to expose my phone number or my email.
Yeah.
So my whole thing is that the iMessage becomes less interesting.
I could send animated GIFs, and I really love that.
And stickers.
Stickers. Stickers were big, but with Telegram. But now that I've discovered the fact that I can type in I can select GIF and then type in a word, and we'll find an animated GIF that matches.
Yes.
And then send that animated GIF. That is awesome.
One of the biggest problems with all this, too, is unlike email, it's not a standard system. So if someone in one of your Asian friends is using Line, someone in China is using WeChat, someone else is using WhatsApp, someone else is using Facebook, none of you can talk to each other. You all have to have this sort of communal agreement that will stick on this phone, this service. So then everyone ends up having five or six services they have to use.
That's
almost my whole front page is services.
Yeah.
You know, like, who me I'm too. Talking to. I have a messaging folder.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's if there's one feature that I count on for my watch, it's not just notifications. It's just it's the one place I can look to see where everybody who has tried to send me a private message message between Twitter and Hangouts and text messages. And now Slack. Now I'm working with like two people who like want to use Slack for everything. I'm like,
yep.
But this is how it used to be with instant messaging. Remember, it was AIM or it was MSN or it was ICQ, and then they federated. It used to be this way with email. You guys are too young, maybe, to remember that when you had MCI mail, you couldn't mail something to somebody who was on Genie or CompuServe.
Mm-hmm.
They had to be on the same service.
Yep.
This is where we're in.
We repeat it over and over and over again.
Primitive Stone Age of messaging.
I mean, Facebook's almost becoming AOL again.
That's why, by the way, Facebook's going to win, because that's the lingua franca, the lowest common denominator. And I think it's going to win on this. It's just going to.
And they own WhatsApp too. So.
And they own WhatsApp. And then they haven't federated the two, which is strange, but I'm sure they will at some point.
Well, their whole thing is attention. They want you to have. It's almost like when in Canada, Best Buy and Future Shop were built across from each other, even though it's the same owner. Because you get upset with Best Buy, you go to Future Shop, they still win.
Monopoly. And you don't even know it.
No, yeah.
You don't even know it.
I just wish I weren't still so I'm skeeved out by Facebook enough that I don't want to use them for. I want to use them as little as possible. And I actually had to recently think, okay, are you really that skeeved out by Facebook that you're willing to alienate all of your friends and family that only use Facebook to like post pictures and make announcements? And I decided that in the end, after a lot of thought, I don't really want to alienate myself from all of my friends and family members quite that
But then
that
you
bad.
See those articles about how they try to see if they can experiment on you and make your timeline sadder. And then you wander all over again whether it's worth it.
And they experimented with outages to see how long, if they pulled the plug on your Facebook, would you come back? Like, It's just as someone who's a fan of Google, I know it sounds stupid, but it's like I just don't like this. I just don't like the data suck. And every time it keeps my profile, it keeps telling me, but your profile is only 38% finished. Won't you tell us where you went to college? Here, we made four guesses about where you went to college. Just point to the one that is where you went to college. and every time they guess wrong, like all four guesses, I'm like, today I go out and get waffles because today was a wonderful day.
Yeah, that's what it was called. It was called Synergy in WebOS. It would just take all your accounts and show you a unified view of them. And I would just love someone to pick
BlackBerry
up that idea.
Does that too. They have that.
They have the hub now,
which I really hate. Because it's a mishmash
it's
of
just
stuff.
Not done,
it's
yeah.
not, yeah. So that's not the answer either. This is tough. I think the answer is to one company has a total and utter monopoly.
The Google Book.
Apple has to pay 318 million euros after an Italian tax fraud investigation. I don't even want to read this story.
Yep.
Okay, fine. Apple faces $5 million lawsuit over, get this, allegedly slowing down the iPhone 4S with iOS 9.
Nonsense.
You put out iOS 9 and
one of the coolest things, and I think this is widely known, one of the coolest things Apple did a couple of years ago is they made their performance team members carry around the oldest versions of the iPhone so that they would be forced to, they already cared about it because their moms had those phones, their dads had those phones, but now they have those phones and they're not going to live with slow phones.
Well, and I will say that my 6S is much faster than my 6 Plus. You know, I notice it's much more responsive, you know, so it definitely, you know, it's asking for more and the new hardware is built for it, you know, but there's less. And I don't know why the two phones are so much different, but the other thing is
one of the big things that the stories that one of these stories said was that people search for the word iPhone slow almost every year when the new iPhone comes out. And that doesn't happen with Android, but they don't say that Android phones come out all different times during the year. There's not one time a year when every new Android phone comes out or new Android operating system comes out. It's the same volume as there is just spread out over every month.
Just really frustrated that the more you shake it, it doesn't seem to go any faster. I do this.
Put it under your arm.
Did you get out and push, Alex?
I shake it and hit it again and doesn't work.
Watch this video. Tell me what is happening in this video. That is a Parrot Bebop drone, and apparently
he's using the force
to
the truth could be almost as impressive.
Steer the Bebop drone. This is a company that has made an Apple Watch app that uses the accelerometer in the Apple Watch to sense your arm movements and steer your drone.
There was a story today about the Sphero BB-8 having a Sphero BB-8 watch that would use force gestures to control the robot.
Love this. I can't wait till I can do Tai Chi and the drone will follow me everywhere.
It is cool. It makes you feel like you have the force.
Yeah. I'll still crash it because
I just think you shouldn't have named it something that sounds like
it doesn't
like
matter
a
STD. How
they'll send it to your sister's hair.
And they've invented apparently clap on, clap off. So that's nice.
Oh, he's changing the color with his hand.
Scrolling through the colors.
He's spelling out the letter R to turn it to red. He's spelling.
See,
out
that's interesting. That's interesting. Oh, so these are Chinese.
It's
that's
like
R.
Strange.
That's R. Yeah.
Huh. By the hoary host of Harkoff.
The question is, will that ever become second nature to the wearer?
Right.
As opposed to taking out as opposed to simply saying, "Hey, Shlomo."
Gestures are challenging.
Give me the
Mm-hmm. Abstract gestures are hard to remember. Like basic gestures like up, down, left, right, and there's very, very few of those are really easy to remember. But when you start getting into, again, it's like incantations with sorcery. You've got to carefully memorize the right one to affect the world around you.
I do love moving my hand around to steer.
We're all going to have to go to wizard school.
Although, you know, the thing is that it depends on, you know, as this progresses, you know, there was this thing that that actually almost ended my career in visual effects. Called marking menus in Maya, and you would just, you know, you'd just flick your wrist and you just constantly being able to do, and you learn how to do that very quickly. Like you don't even have to look down. And I think that as these get better and more responsive and you're not spending so much time trying to figure it out, I think people will use them a lot in both professional and more in professional settings than recreational, because you're doing the same thing over and over again and you need it to work.
They're applying for a patent for this poorly named software. It's called Dong. They do point out that there are issues. For instance, it kills the battery life of the watch in about 20 minutes. Your watch will actually run out of juice faster than your drone does. But I think it's a technology demo. It's not yet a product.
Well, another watch. Strap another watch on.
They need two. I need my drone watch and I need my regular
day watch.
We mentioned the iPhone 7 will not have a headphone jack. That rumor can persist, and now the supply chain is confirming it. So I'm starting to believe.
It's only a matter of time.
Yeah, I'm starting to believe. Okay, everybody agrees now, I think, that as wonderful as the new Apple TV is, there is a fundamental flaw, which is that I saw somebody tweet this. I can't watch a movie without rewinding it four times by accident.
Not only that, there's no snap back. Like, it doesn't really snap back to where you were.
Yeah.
Like,
press the menu button, it'll snap back.
Press the menu button.
What?
Yeah. Press the menu button, it'll snap back.
The remote is way too sensitive. Oh, okay. I actually have to take it and put it somewhere away from me because I've stopped the motion. I've rewound it. And you don't, at first, the first time, a few times it happens, you go, what the hell? What? Yep. And you're sitting on the remote. So now you have to very carefully put the remote.
Yeah, you have to, you get used to it. I'm not as annoyed as I was the first weekend, but it's still a month or two later, it's still an annoyance.
And if you have cats, you're screwed.
it also does something kind of weird. It loses the, I have it temporarily paired with a Bluetooth speaker. And when it drops the connection to the Bluetooth speaker periodically, which is annoying. I'm trying to figure out whether this is Apple's fault or the design of the speaker's fault. I don't know whether the speaker is going into rest mode. That's probably what it is. But I'll just for humor's sake, I will simply explain that I will fall asleep watching a movie on Apple TV. And then wake up like once, if I'm in a deep sleep, it'll wake me up like once every 10 minutes because the connection will get restarted. And my speaker has this really lovely, like professional announcer's voice that says, "Soulmate is connected." And loud and lots of bass. And so I wake up, then go fall back to sleep because I'm not enough. Then pick me asleep. Soulmate is connected.
It's trying to tell you something, Andrew. Your soulmate is out there waiting somewhere.
I think I should probably, it's working well enough now that I should probably upgrade it to an actual like setup with real speakers and stuff. I do like it a lot. I mean, I had a tweet about this the other day because like I've set it up for the default so it downloads new screensavers only once a month. And when there's a new screensaver, you're like, oh boy, new screensaver. I was going to watch something on Hulu, but let's just watch the screensaver.
Yeah.
Oh, look, we're flying over Tokyo now. Hey.
Well, I
just need more apps for it. That's all.
No matter how bad it is, you know, of course, the old remote will work with the new Apple TV. And I know in the article he said that it got worse. It did not. If you actually take the old one and try to use it, it makes me crazy now. Like it is much slower to use the old remote with the new Apple TV. Remote app is really the way to go.
My biggest pain point is still apps. Like if you or Andy tell me a great app, I just have no way of getting it without going to the search and trying to type in the name and looking for it. Yeah. And I really hope if Apple does one thing this year, it's to make purchasing apps cross-platform and cross-device. So no matter what device is, I can go there, I can see the app, I can say buy it. The next time I'm on that device, just pop up something and say, do you want to confirm this previous purchase? I'll say yes, and I'll have my app. That way, if I'm out on my iPhone and see a great Mac app, I can buy it. If I'm on my iPhone and I see an Apple TV app, I can buy it. It would make my life so much easier.
Well, and I am surprised at how many things on a big screen your brain changes mode, some kind of beta mode, and you start doing things. Like I downloaded just to see what Zillow looked like, and before I knew it, I had spent like 45 minutes like wandering through houses. I was like, well, Carlita wants to get a house, and so we're like,
Zillow's great.
Airbnb, shopping stuff.
Realtor.com is more up to date.
Do they have an app though?
Yeah,
they have an app on the Apple TV.
Yeah,
okay.
Oh, on the Apple TV.
That's what I was sitting on. I was in on the Apple TV. Like, oh, look at
that. It's a really nice browsing experience.
Yeah.
You know, the biggest thing you realize on any of these on your Apple, whether it's an Apple TV or iPhone, is that you cannot get anything actually useful for less than $1 million in San Rafael. I mean, you know, you're just like, whoa.
Well, so it's the perfect app for any Apple consumer.
Exactly.
It's depressive. Yes. It's depressive.
Actually, they just don't show anything less than $1 million.
Let's move to I'm just looking for Oklahoma. Something. I don't want to put my little trial fires in a college dorm. We'll just buy him a little crap hole that he can live in.
It'd
spending
be amazing how many people do that. By the way, I just want to point out, I was shocked to learn when my son went to CU Boulder that's one of the things parents did.
What?
They buy houses.
Oh, I had a friend who bought one in Berkeley. Her dad bought one in Berkeley.
And you make money.
Three sisters, or she had two sisters. By the time they got through it, paid sold the house. It paid for all the education and gave them some money to start their company.
Those days
their
are gone.
It was like, yeah, it was. Well, and it was right at the right time. It just turned by accident. It turned out to be the right time.
But. Hey, here's one I want, but it's you're going to have to go to GitHub and sideload it for your Apple TV. This is an article Andrew Cunningham wrote on Ars Technica, how to put a game emulator.
Yep.
You can't, obviously, Apple's not putting this in the store, but there's one called Provenance, which emulates the NES, the Super NES, Sega, Sega Genesis, Sega CD, Game Boy, and Game Boy Advance. Wouldn't that be awesome?
We all are using our own ROMs, of course, so it's perfectly fine.
Yes. Oh, only use your own ROMs.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, it's a terrific piece of software.
No, it said in the article, did it say in the article that some of the MAME stuff was actually already available?
There is a MAME emulator. He says it's, Andrew says it's not being kept up to date.
Here's the MAME emulator.
I just need to play Space Invaders.
Oh, somebody's playing Donkey Kong. Look at that.
That's on MAME.
That's nice. And that's on an Apple TV.
Yeah.
So you have to sideload these apps? Is that the way you get these?
Yeah, you download the GitHub repository, and then you just open up Xcode, and you sign it, and you load it on.
So it's not that hard?
No. I mean, you just need a little bit of technical skill, but not much.
And the graphics are going to be a huge, for my son, the graphics are going to be a huge step up from Minecraft.
Yes.
Isn't that funny? Or at least they'll look familiar when he's playing Joust.
He'll just look,
I know. That's 8-bit. I love that.
That resolution is so high.
That's cool. Wow. That's 16-bit? Okay, I'm going to do this. This sounds worthwhile. It's not that hard.
I just saw the article in the notes, so I didn't have time to do it before we got here, but I'm definitely doing it this week.
This would be a good maybe little how-to. I could film us doing this. So it's not that hard. Have you done it, Renee?
No, I played around with it when the Apple TV first came out because I had it hooked up to Xcode anyway to do all the screenshots and the videos.
Andrew says he recommends is called Provenance.
Yes.
It's free. James Addyman. .com and the instructions are, you're right, they're fairly straightforward, and the trick is getting ROMs. He even describes, you know,
I'm just really bummed out because I once spent like a bunch of years ago a lot of time laboriously pulling the ROMs out of my collection of classic arcade cabinets and dumping, doing a ROM.
Thank goodness you did
files.
That. It was very forward thinking.
And unfortunately, I don't know where I must have like not transferred it to a.
Did
new
you actually
machine.
Do that?
If we're recording this being broadcast, yes. I got like 40 arcades.
Yes, me
ROMs,
too.
Put them in an EEPROM flash.
We all did that.
I don't know where it is, and now I'm not sure I know where to go to where I stored all of those original arcade games so I could go reflash those ROMs again.
Yes.
And that's why I haven't been able to use MAME for.
You know, it's okay if you play these games as long as you just take a quarter every time. And you put it
right on the table.
Put it on the table.
So long as you feel bad about it, I think. That's really all that Namco can expect.
I will be really happy if I get my Apple TV to go.
Tore
Sega.
Up about
I would just love them to make a service like Netflix where they have just a catalog of old games that the companies are not getting very much value
service.
For anymore either.
Well,
and then just
GOG. There's good old games. They need a good old games for arcade machines, basically.
Yes.
And archive.org has some like JavaScript emulators that are keeping really great old games alive. But and there's something about the original version of like a Tapper or Dig Dug,
where
it hasn't been changed for PC at all. It is exactly what it was like in that Candlepin bowling alley in suburban Boston.
Yeah.
There's a market there somewhere of building, like rebuilding just the controller for each game.
Yeah.
So you could like pull a different controller over and it would be like the real one that's really hard to emulate is Tempest. Because it was.
You had a big ball.
Spinner, a track ball. Yeah. You had to, you know.
Sell me my childhood back to me, please. Take my money.
There's Celebration.
There's like three or four of them that if they made them like $40 each, I'd probably buy a couple of them. You know, and Bluetooth connected to my Apple TV and I could play Asteroids with the actual whatever or, you know.
Some companies have done that with Xbox. Unfortunately, the one company has done it with Xbox One, but it's all European console game, which I never played.
I was thinking that.
Yeah.
But apparently very popular.
Right.
And it's like, you know, pay $20 and you get 40 games.
But I don't want a generalized one. I want MAME. But the thing is, I want to buy a controller that feels like the.
Oh yeah.
We have those.
We built some. You know, In fact, we're gonna the new screensavers. Jason Howell's building a MAME cabinet, and we're gonna do that on the next couple episodes. I think Jason's gonna be showing us his MAME cabinet.
One of my favorite Guy English articles was the desire for Nintendo to make made for iPhone controllers. And that way Nintendo's still making hardware. Right. What you're holding in your hand is still Nintendo. And they come with bundled right. apps. Like once you buy the controller, you can download the apps for them.
Right.
And that way they have the reach of Apple's platform, but they're still making physical hardware that feels like Nintendo.
There is celebration tonight in Cupertino. Marques Brownlee has switched back to Final Cut Pro 10.
Or switched for the
I'm
first
shocked.
Time.
Shocked.
It's like the special edition update to the end of Return of the Jedi, where celebrations and Coruscant and everywhere yeah, else.
Exactly. They'll be dancing tonight among the Ewoks.
Ooh, planet
MKBHD used to use Adobe Premiere Pro. He never used Final Cut? He's not switching back, he's switching to.
I don't know. It sounded like the tweets made it sound like he was switching to, but I might be wrong.
So, he tweets, I switched to Final Cut Pro 10, and I like it. I don't think anyone can tell which video was the first FCPX edit.
He will, because it just got done fast. I mean, the bottom line is, I mean, we can talk a lot about whether Avid or Premiere or other things are better or worse, because they all have their advantages and disadvantages. We're actually using Premiere for a handful of things, and then we use Final Cut for 90% of what we do, because mostly what we want to do is turn things around quickly. And you really can't have that conversation about whether they're even or not. The speed at which you can edit once you understand how to use Final Cut and the speed of the export is twice as fast as Premiere.
That's what he says, is that the export. And it means you can also use Final Cut on a lower end, like a MacBook.
I mean, it exports on my Retina like it's almost like magic.
But
I'm not even sure. Like, did it really export that whole 1 hour? I mean, it's crazy.
And it does rendering, real-time rendering.
It does real-time rendering, 4K, you know, and it'll handle the pro, you know, it'll do all of those things. And again, I used to be very superstitious and not do it, but now you just send a compressor, and then compressor has your thing, and compressor is so fast. I mean,
it as easy now to use as iMovie? I mean, is it similar to that?
It's harder than iMovie, but if you started an iMovie, then it's just the perfect upgrade. Right. You know, that's what it really aimed at was. The biggest video app in the world is iMovie, because that's right. what ships on every computer. And then and how do you make that integration easier? It's a lot easier for someone to go from iMovie to Final Cut 10 than it was to, you know, to go to Final Cut 7.
Here's good news. Apparently I own it.
There you go.
It was
go.
Funny. Yeah. Last CES, we did a three-camera shoot for an interview with Kelly Lewis, and they just gave it to me at the end. And a friend of mine was there, Martin Reich. In 5 minutes, he showed me how to do a three-camera edit in Final Cut. And I did it, and we rendered it. And about 45 minutes later, we had the completed video uploaded.
That was always one of the nice features. You could switch in post, so you could have three ISO'd cameras and then and do the switching later.
And I'd never done that. I had no
that's
idea
nice.
How to do that going.
Yeah, that's a nice feature.
I remember telling Leo when we did that first video, oh, yeah, you can just do multicam in Final Cut 7. And I had never done it.
And then you tried it.
Well, I spent all night. I got it done.
You got it done.
But this just automatically aligned everything based on the great. Sound. And yeah, it was terrific.
No, it's screaming fast. I mean, that's the big thing is that it's super
it's
fast.
Optimized
I don't like the way
for Mac,
it manages.
Probably, yeah. Don't keep saying this because we switched from Final Cut to Premiere, and our editors are now using Premiere on Dell PCs, and they're going to go get mad at me.
Final Cut 7 to Premiere is a big upgrade. Final Cut, I mean, if you're doing fast, sorry, guys.
It's only $300, too.
Yeah.
And apparently, at some point in my history, I bought it because it just says install, which
is great.
It's not
only $300. They have never charged for an upgrade.
Yeah.
So
that's nice. So I can just install this. Maybe I will. I'll put it on my MacBook and see what it's like.
It's a lot of fun to use.
Just across the board. I was surprised that I cut a couple of videos on the iPad Pro in iMovie just to as part of my workout for it. But now I actually prefer to cut videos on iPad Pro. It's just the tactile nature of it and that big screen makes it work. And
I haven't done that, and I should play with it.
And what do you use, Andy?
Just iMovie. And just the ability that I'm not, you know, I'm not going like this and like keeping my eye someplace else. But I'm just saying, okay, I want that to be cut there. And I want this clip to go in there. And now I want this to be more of a pause. And it's like it gets me into an editing fugue quicker and more deeply than on Final Cut. As much as I love Final Cut.
All right.
Serenity's been using that, and she's been using Pinnacle, which is either used to be Avid Studio and both of them, she said, are just fantastic.
Thanks. I kind of stopped editing video. Maybe I should start again. Nope, not going to do it. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with your picks of the week. So you better enter them in because Jason Kleanthis is waiting.
Oh, no.
I entered mine, and I was a good boy. I'll tell you, I got a pick for you right now, audible.com. Are you yet an Audible listener? I love Audible. I've been listening. I put this aside for a while, and I've been listening to the new Neal Stephenson, Seven Eves. And it has some of the appeal The Martian did. If you like The Martian, the idea of, you know, here's the problem. How do we solve this using science? And you like space science. I think you'll really like Seven Eves, Stevenson's newest. I don't think it's a spoiler to say that the problem is that the Earth is about to be destroyed. You got 2 years. You got some people in space, and they're going to try to save as many people as they can. How do they use science to do it? I love Neal Stephenson. He's one of my favorite novelists. I wasn't crazy about Rimd, but I think he's back on form with Seven Eves, and it's good hard science fiction. What have you been listening to, Andy, lately?
Actually, this is inspired. This is a book that I read in paper like 5 years ago, and then it was on sale on Kindle, and that's when I realized that Longitude is available on Audible, which is one of my favorite.
Oh, I read it too.
Books.
Love it.
This was without spoiling it for anybody. This is a nonfiction book. It's about what you can only refer to as a moonshot project in science in the 1700s, which was to figure out a way that a ship at sea could calculate longitude. And everybody figured, and the people have been working on this for centuries, because otherwise you can't navigate. And so everyone was trying to figure out, well, if we just have better ways of measuring the stars, we can calculate it from there. And the solution this guy came up with was, well, what if this would be easy if there was some damn way to make a clock work and keep accurate time on a ship. And so he solved the problem of how do we make a clock that will keep if we set it correctly when it leaves the port, will maintain that correct time at sea. And it absolutely changed everything. And the story of how this was developed, and there's the fact that governments had set up these X prizes for solving the problem, and also like what the formality of doing science and doing engineering in the 1700s, start to finish, is just one of those wonderful stories
classic.
Yep. As an afterthought, you're like, oh, I forgot. This isn't a novel. All of this just actually happened.
Yeah.
Oh, even better.
And apparently, Neil Armstrong.
Yep. I didn't. That's what got me to spend one of my credits on this one. I did not know that Neil Armstrong himself actually wrote and recorded the foreword to this. And he tells this wonderful story about how he's Neil freaking Armstrong. And if you're the curator of a museum and like, hi, well, you're the first person to ever walk on a planet. And he's responding, oh, my God, you're the curator who gets to actually touch the very first clock that was made for longitude.
It's
you're
so cool.
Awesome.
Isn't that nice? Isn't that neat? It was a tough problem to solve, because they could calculate latitude by shooting the sun.
Right.
So they knew where they were. Latitude-wise, horizontally, but they had no idea where they were vertically, and so they just had to do it by dead reckoning until an accurate clock was made. It's a wonderful book. I agree with you. It's not very long, 4 hours and 20 minutes. Do they have on the sample? Is Neil Armstrong on the sample?
Bird clocks seemed to be slightly smaller and had similar but somewhat different mechanisms. The final Harrison clock, and reputedly the best performer.
Okay, no spoilers, Neil. You know Neil. Great choice. So here's why are we talking about this? Because, first of all, we love Audible. And secondly, because we've got a free book for you. And so I'll give you one more that I just started reading. Marie Kondo. Do you know who she is? She is now changing the world one clutter at a time. She's written a book called The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, the Japanese Art of Decluttering and Organizing. And mock this though you may.
Oh, no. I love it.
It's awesome.
I love the idea of making it like a form of formalized prayer.
It is. It is like Zen. It's Zen. Yep. And this book was written about a year ago and is now taking the world by storm. And I almost bought it. And then I thought, oh, wait a minute. I can get it on Audible. And that's one of the great things about Audible. When you see a book that's in the bestseller list or whatever, you almost always can listen on Audible.
And here's the thing is, while you're cleaning and decluttering,
I can declutter and listen to it. Doing the KonMari system.
No joke. I almost said that when we were talking about the length of the Longitude book. At 4 hours and something, for me, that's the perfect book length for getting a cleaning project done from start to finish. As in
perfect.
Pulling the furniture. Because you don't want to stop listening to the story. And so that will get, well, okay, I did clean all the countertops, but you know what? I didn't scrub down. I didn't take all the appliances out and scrub down. And then by the time you get to the end of like a Neil Gaiman's, like a young adult's book, you're like, what if I were to pull the furniture to the center of the room and scrub down the baseboards? Because I've never scrubbed the baseboards in a couple of years.
This is where an Amazon Echo is great, because the Echo will read you your book.
Yeah.
And I like that a lot.
What I can't believe is they actually have Cliff Notes for books.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You can get the book
or get the Cliff Notes.
You can basically get – that takes all the fun out of it. Well, it's 15-minute summary and analysis of life-changing magic. And, you know, it's
you could do that, or you could read the book. But you could do them both at Audible. Get the first book free when you go to audible.com/MacBreak. We're big fans, obviously. 180,000 titles, all kinds of literature, science fiction, they're really good, but also nonfiction. I listen to a lot of history and even college lectures. They've got the great courses as well. And I'm learning French, or relearning it, or polishing it up a little bit. They've got the Pimsleur series and others. I'm doing the Collins series, and it's all at Audible. Try it today. Audible.com/MacBreak. Your first book is free. Let's get our picks of the week. Andy Anatko, let's start with you.
I've been trying to solve a problem since I got the iPad Pro, which is we've talked about the goodness and the badness of this design.
The pencil.
And amongst the badness is I it's $100 and I know it's really hard. I have two of them now, but I'm terrified of like breaking one and then trying to figure out how to replace it. And so I just don't have a good solution for carrying it from one place to another.
It is exactly my problem with it. My number one issue.
It doesn't have a clip.
It doesn't have a clip. And also you're worried about like, so I've got like, you know, pencil slots in my laptop case, but I'm worried about like the tip getting bruised and stuff like that. Okay. So let me show you what this is. Ba-bump. This is a
pencil
Japanese
box.
No, this is a chopstick case for little kids. And so you take the chopsticks out. The size of this chopstick is exactly the length
coincidence
of the Apple pencil.
I think not.
Probably not.
So now you put this inside the chopstick.
After much studying, we've decided the perfect
and it is
proportion.
Completely protected.
After much study, so we ate a lot of sushi.
Yes. And so now this goes into your laptop bag. It won't get broken. Okay. Won't get bent. The only improvement I'm going to make, it rattles around a little bit. So the only improvement I'm going to make is that I have some Suguru. That sort of like polymer rubber that air cures. So when that arrives, I'm going to basically line the bottom of this with Suguru and mold it to this and then take it out and let it cure. And then it will be like a
perfect. Well, no, but the thing is, Andy, if you send me the link of that one, I'll buy that one and then I'll print an insert and send it to you.
Oh. That's the other thing I was going to do. I did put the link in the notes.
Okay.
So that's going to be version number two. I only started solving this problem like last week, and a friend of mine, Trish, who's a professional artist, she's a colorist who does things for DC Comics, was the person who introduced me to the concept of, well, what if you get a chopstick case, because she has to carry art tools everywhere too.
Yeah.
So I have to credit Trish. I have another idea that I'm working on. I ordered the components for, but I did decide that if this I ordered like three or four of them. This was just like the first one to arrive. I did decide that this worked so well that I decided that the one that I like most, and I do have a Bots Maru one coming. I would 3D print an insert for it to make it perfect. But it's like,
or I buy a second Apple pencil and you'll never want for chopsticks again.
Toozies.
That's a good point, actually. But for God's sakes, where are you going to find a second Apple pencil?
That's a good question.
And if you do have two, it's like the president and the vice president on the same airplane. You don't want to risk losing both of them.
What, by the way, is the story with the Apple Pencil?
The last rumor I heard is that they changed the material and the tip very late in the production run to something that was sturdier but also less scratch prone. And that material has proven very hard to manufacture.
Oh, great. Yep.
I heard it had something to do with yields, where they can make a lot of them but not as many of them. It is anytime that Apple every now and then Apple does something that's brand new, and it's not just making a new version of the old thing. It's like they have to invent a brand new process for doing the thing they want to do. And for that first release, they're going to have to toss out a whole bunch that aren't going to actually work out.
I credit your rumor, though, because they were going to sell kits of five tips, different style tips, which they never have yet. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense that the tips might be the difficult thing for them to do. And you do, of course, when you buy a pencil, get two tips.
Yeah, it's the material, apparently. Like Andy said, the yield is not great on it.
Yeah. What is the material? Is it silicone?
It's some space age apple something or something.
Yeah. We decided not to use
the obvious. I'm hoping that's the first upgrade. If they have a replaceable tip that maybe trades off a little bit of accuracy to make it softer so that you can take notes during a meeting and you're not always going tap, 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 tap.
I'd also like it to have just a little bit more bite. You know, just
The tip kit will do, right, is they have different...
Right, yeah, because I just want a little more bite than it has. Yeah. It would feel really like a pencil.
Yeah.
There was a similar with the Apple Watch when it first shipped. Rumor has it one of the suppliers for Taptic engines couldn't make enough, or some of them were bad and they had to get rid of a lot. Right. And the bands, also some of the leather they sourced was hard to get. So whenever they try new materials, there's always a high cost for it.
But this is a good solution for now. And it only costs this one I got on Amazon. It costs like $8.
Yeah, we showed the link. That's
great.
And you do get
free set of pokey sticks with it. So if you have like a younger sister or an older sister,
teaser.
Hello. Or you could eat food with it. Radical.
You don't have to leave my favorite seat in the living room. Poke, if you don't mind poke, me poking you, poke, 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 poke. Poke.
Mr. Rene Ritchie, your pick of the week.
I have two. One is more of a generalized pick, and that is 1Password. I use 1Password. If you use LastPass, that's fine. But I always like to take the new year to go through and do a security audit. And the apps make it easier than ever. They'll show you weak passwords, duplicate passwords, passwords you haven't changed in a long time. They'll let you know if a service that you're using has had a compromise in the recent past, so you can go in and change your password. If you haven't set up two-factor, a lot of them now support two-factor, so you can do it more easily. So just generally going through and using one of these apps, again, whether it's 1Password or LastPass, whatever you prefer, and making sure you're as secure as possible going into the new year, because it's only going to get more difficult out there. And the second one is something really cool that Griffin Technology announced today at CES, and that's sort of for people who really miss the MagSafe adapter.
I'm getting
on
this.
On the MacBook, it's because back, the MacBook baby. Has USB-C. Yeah, Griffin makes this great little two-part clip where it's not exactly the same because it's not internal to the device, but you basically have the USB-C part that goes into the computer. Then there's a MagSafe at the other end of the cable, and it'll break off, about a centimeter off from the outside of the computer. And that way, if someone snags the line or hits the line while you're using it, while charging it, it'll just come up. The cable will basically split in two, and your computer won't get traversed across the scenery.
Hmm.
That's shipping sometime in the near future.
Griffin is just such a font of clever ideas. I like him a lot.
They had so many press releases today. So many. It was amazing. All the rose gold stuff.
Were there lots of press releases, Renee? I wouldn't know because I set my computer on fire before CES.
Yeah, I don't check email during CES week.
Mine was supposed to go. We have a team of people who were doing just CES this year, and the press releases still all came to me. So I was supposed to.
Nice. Yeah. Alex Lindsay. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that at least in the old days when they'd send printed press releases, it was 10, it was 8 degrees last night. I would at least have fuel I could burn. these emails, the ones I don't need are actually useless.
I didn't have to go this year. It feels strange sitting here.
Feels great, doesn't it?
But it's worse. Yeah.
The first time you realize that so much of humanity's suffering is self-inflicted and you can just choose to not self-inflict the suffering. It's like. What are these wings behind? Did I always have these? Was I always able to fly? And the first year I didn't go to CES, it's like everything turned out great.
Yeah.
Now I'm healthy. I'm productive. I have sleep.
I think it's the first time in 5 years I haven't gone. And I was
really?
Yeah, it was just too much. I got a big event next week and I just was like,
This is one of the years, and they happen from time to time, where I don't feel like I'm going to miss anything of importance. I can't imagine any big announcements at CES.
I like playing with all the little things and thinking about where it's going to go and everything else. I will admit I missed that, but it was
too crazy.
Compact.
There was one announcement. Yeah. Ford announced that they are the 2017. Is that right? Yeah, 2017. What year are we in? The 2017 next year's car model year from Ford will support CarPlay as well as Android.
And I feel like only kind of though, because they have their own Ford has its own app. They have their own.
And you'll be able to talk to it with the Amazon Echo.
But it's not Microsoft embedded anymore, right? That's the big
thing. That's right. They went to QNX, I think, like everybody else.
I'm so scared for QNX because, you know, BlackBerry's still not doing that well, and QNX is so important to so many industries.
Well, it could be their business.
But I do, yeah. I'm kind of in the market. I'm trying to figure out whether I buy a new car this year or next year.
My lease runs out in September.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. And I realize that my two things that I have to have is CarPlay has to be there because it has to be well developed, part of it, everything else. And the second thing is that I have to be able to plug it in. Like, I'm not going to, I mean, I don't want it to be totally, like,
I agree
I'm
with you.
Plugging, but those are the two things
that I
realize.
That's why we've got solar panels.
And everything else is all, you know, I'll figure everything else out.
We got solar panels so I could buy an electric car.
I really want the sticker.
Why doesn't Tesla support CarPlay?
What?
Why doesn't Tesla support CarPlay?
Tesla.
I don't know. He doesn't like Apple, does he? I think he doesn't. He says the Tesla engineers who went to Apple were all the losers.
That's what you would say after they all left.
Alex Lindsay, your pick of the week.
So I follow a 6-year cycle.
Okay.
Since I was 16.
Okay.
That I'm trying to kill the cycle, but I haven't killed it yet. But this, I'm just going to go back into the cycle.
Since you were 17.
16 years old.
Wow.
That I gain weight, and then I go, okay,
yeah.
It ends here.
I've seen you do that.
That was the last cycle.
Yeah.
So now I'm at that 6-year cycle
me too.
Again,
yeah.
And I'm like, okay, enough. And you saw what I did last time.
It was amazing. So, mind-boggling.
So I'm gonna, and really what hit me was traveling and not being able to get to a gym, because I'm so gym-driven since I was 16.
Yeah.
I would go to the gym and work out, and I'm very...
and all that.
Yeah. I did some PDNA, but what I'm really good at is you give me a bunch of free weights, and I just know what
just
to do with
those.
Just give
him iron, and he'll throw it around.
And so... I decided that had to be broken because I travel too much. Like that's why I'm not good at, like, a very slow metabolism. I could last a long time, you know, if you didn't give me food. But I'm not good at just not eating enough food. I don't eat a ton. I just gain weight easily. Anyway, so I decided I'm going to do something that's a workout, and I found an app. Of course, it has to have an app because
there's an app for that.
There had to be an app for that. And so the app that I'm going to try, and we'll see how effective it is. I'm either going to be a great ad or I'm going to be a Kirstie Alley, and I don't know, you know, which. The app that I got that I'm actually pretty excited about now is called Results.
Results.
And it's by Runtastic. And it's
free. Runtastic, though, the good thing about them, they work with everything. They really have... that sounds good to me.
Yeah, so it's all body weight stuff. And I will warn you that if you decide to do it, so I paid, and I just paid the year ahead. What's really cool about this is that they have great videos. So for every piece of your workout, it shows you a little video that shows you exactly how you're supposed to be doing this from different angles.
That's important.
And it's cool, and it's got, you know, it works really well. The test, I will say, took me a week to recover from. So, you know, I played hard. I tend to play hard. like literally couldn't walk. I couldn't walk right for like a week. So be careful of the test. Don't be discouraged once you take the test, because the workout is not nearly as hard as the test
is. Yeah, but the test is a test.
But what's really fun is my son is, you know, is following my footsteps as far as getting a little overweight. And so the two of us are now doing it together in the morning.
That's cute.
So the two of us put up a little iPhone, and the two of us do our workout together. And because I don't...
How long is the workout?
It's just started, but it's 10 minutes right now.
So it's high intensity.
Yeah. And short. Man, I'm sweating up a storm when I'm done. And I, you know, it's like 15 minutes they have like a warm up and then they do the workout. And it's, I'm sure it's short and easy because because the way I tested.
you're in trouble, dude. We're going to,
but I really like it. I mean, I think that, again, what I like is being able to watch it, and you know, there's going to be the next generation of this will be like in 3D, and you can spin it around on your Apple TV, and I can't wait for an Apple TV version of this, but because I happen to work out near the TV, but really easy to be, you know, kind of pushing through it and so on and so forth. It'll take me all year to make a dent, but in addition to, you know, doing better about eating, I'm gonna start doing this, and so anyway.
The other one to look at is FitStart, Tony Gonzalez's FitStart. That was bought by Fitbit, and that's why it works with the new Fitbit watch. That's a really nice iPad app. Similar idea. Very same idea.
Yeah, so.
This looks good.
We did a whole bunch for another company that remained on. We did 400, you know, like motion capture things for this kind of thing, and I felt like this app is a better, even if it's just video, it's still a better solution.
Runtastic's Results on Android as well as iOS. And what is the year subscription? Because it's a free app, but then there's a...
I think I paid $50 for the year.
Cheaper than a gym.
It is, and I know that.
Yeah.
No comment.
So I am charging my laptop right now with my pick of the week. I just got it in the mail. I don't know why. I think Zolt, they said, here, take this. This is the world's smallest laptop charger. This is big. This is powerful enough to charge my MacBook. It comes with a variety of tips. You have to get a MacBook tip to work with it, but it comes with tips for all the laptops. Remember the days when you have to have specialty? These are all going to be gone soon. It's all going to be Type-C someday, I hope. What's nice about this is it's very small, folds up. You can wrap the cable around it, and it even has two additional USB chargers. So when you for your travel adapter, you plug this in, and you can charge your laptop to other things on this. Be great for the MacBook. Would presumably work with the MacBook, just using a Type-C USB connector. But the tips are these special proprietary tips, so you have to...
How did they get around the whole Apple thing with the tip?
That's a good question, because it is, if you look at it, it is a MagSafe adapter. I guess they licensed it. I don't know. $99.99 at gozolt.com. It's tiny. What's nice is tiny. Now, this is made of aluminum, and it's warm. So part of the reason, these adaptors are big is they got to dissipate some heat. But this is a lot smaller than your average brick. And I think now I'm going to carry this around. This is I was impressed by this.
So wait,
you can change the tip. What do you mean?
Where do you change the tip? How did you get one that's MagSafe?
There's
another cable.
There's another cable. I didn't bring it with me, but there's another cable. And they say free, you know, as all of these guys do, free tips for life. Blah 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 blah.
So it's not three. Is it three USB ports and one of them is special, or is they?
Yeah, one of them. I don't know how special. It's probably high wattage or something, but it has a little funny little connector to lock it in.
Maybe strong enough for a PC.
Maybe that's it. I don't know. Yeah, they say up to 100 watts, which is pretty hefty.
Because some people plug the MacBook into a regular battery charger for an iPhone and then get surprised that it just trickle charges.
Yeah. No, this has been. It's not as fast probably as the native charger. But I've been using it all through the show, and it's been charging at a relatively reasonable rate. Oh, it also rotates, so you can have it point in a direction that's convenient to the plug. Comes with a 6-foot PC charging cord and 8 PC tips, but they sent me a Mac tip, so I presume that they sell a Mac tip, and whether they sell it or they give it to you for free, I don't know. Because they do say free tips for life.
Send you a splicing kit.
Yeah,
I'm just looking at that pile of different tips, and
those days are soon gone.
That just used to be like every single trip ever, and I can't think of the last time I took anything like that.
Yeah,
that's just progress we've made.
I don't know how effective. I don't know if it's just this show or not, but I just want to point out that a second ago I went up and I was about to order my Zolt.
It's now sold out.
And I went back because I wanted to make sure I got the right MagSafe. I came back and it's now estimated to ship in 6 to 8 weeks.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't know if this show did it that, says, but it was totally fine a second ago.
The MacBook is optional. It works with the 45-watt and 60-watt MacBook Pro and MacBook Air laptops.
There's somebody watching the site going, what just happened? We sold out in 2 seconds.
But it has a lot of different...
Yep. God, if only people could like buy their way into getting mentioned on the show.
Yeah, by sending
stuff. If only they could buy like 30 seconds of time in which a pre-prepared ad could be read.
So whoever sent that to you definitely got their ROI.
Oh look, they have the L cable as well. The Mac mm-hmm. cables are an additional $20. They are not free. So you can get the. They sent me the regular one, but they have the L one for the MacBooks or MacBook Airs, I guess. Huh. Well, it's working. It worked for me, and it got a little warm, but that's probably why it's got an aluminum body. Comes in three colors.
No, I gotta say, I love the tubular shape. Like those,
isn't that great?
The square bricks are sometimes hard to find a pouch in your laptop bag that will definitely fit it.
Right.
This fits perfectly.
It's made to wrap the primary cable around, not the
outlet.
So that. That's another nice.
You can, and if you plug it in, you can turn it into an electromagnet.
I'm broadcasting right now
from my
Lux capacitor.
It'll fit perfectly into the side pouch of a Rush 24.
It has a little clip on it, so you can clip the cable in there. That is a pretty compact.
But don't do that to your cable.
Like,
I know.
It's
bad.
It hurts me.
And I'm probably stressing it right here.
I know. It really hurts me just to look at that.
I should pull
such a bad cable man.
Stress reliever.
And Theo did it just to get to Steve.
Definitely pull it out. You can wrap it around there, but definitely
pull it out. Definitely pull it out.
Look at that.
How many toothpicks are on the floor for Al?
Definitely pull it out.
I can't look at that.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes this edition of MacBreak Weekly. Alex, Lindsay, so nice to see you.
Good to be here.
Anything you want to promote?
Just
follow him on Twitter at Alex Lindsay.
We're planning a bunch of cool stuff soon.
Good.
So that's all I would say. So following me on Twitter is probably the easiest way to do that.
Because you tweet if there's need. By the way, Twitter, according to the Wall Street Journal, next month, or actually in March, will extend the total number of characters in your tweet from 140 to 10,000.
It's the best thing about Twitter was 140 characters.
Oh, that's the end of it. Yeah. Like this could be like the fatal thing that kills Twitter is long posts.
Crazy.
They should have just gone slowly up, like given us one more a day or something like that. You know,
the thing is,
I got another character. I'm not -1. Yeah.
The nice thing about Twitter is that the expectations was easy to manage. So if you had a bunch of people asking you things, they could only ever expect a short answer. But on Facebook or Google Plus, they get really angry if you don't.
Now it's unmanageable email.
What I'm surprised is how well I am, how good I am at thinking in 140 characters. Like I'll think of something, I'll go, oh wait, that wouldn't fit, and then that's why I type it, and I go, oh, that fits perfectly.
You know, I honestly think that using Twitter for so many years has made me a better writer because it learns, like, is there a more efficient way of saying that to make it fit in less? And you find out that, wow, there are three of those words I was able to get rid of, and it didn't affect either the style or the content one bit.
Is that okay if I put a little strain relief on it? Like,
not
that?
Really. No. You do not want to leave that thing.
Think of Alex.
Like that. That is not.
That's
is
not good.
That is not good. It's better.
But it flops around if I don't do that.
Well, think of some way to, like, what you need is like a little thing that hooks onto the thing.
Hoocher? It has a hoocher.
Staple gun it, Leo.
It has a hoocher. Right, I'm not using it. Okay. You solved that. Because it has the little hoocher thing.
Mm-hmm.
And slide that to the other
and
end.
That's what you're supposed to do.
That's what you're supposed to do.
Alex, can I ask you this? Does this, and I'm not being sarcastic.
No, wait.
No, you're hurting him.
Here's how I usually put away a cable. Does that?
No, it's not actually that bad. But what you want to do is make sure that when you do it.
Strain relief. It's all about strain
over,
relief.
Over, under.
Oh, yeah, the over, under trick.
So
I know
over,
that.
Over, under on all your cables.
Alex, are you planning on throwing a 6-foot cable?
When I interview you, by the way, if I ever interview you for a job in production and I see you like do over, under, then I immediately know, like on your headphones, Jack. And
I don't even understand what you're talking about.
You don't know about over under? Oh, right, my God.
Okay. Wait.
Let's have a class in over under.
Okay.
No, not like that.
No.
Watch. It's very easy once you learn it.
So
that's the normal way. You're doing it that. And then the next one, you twist.
So it's under.
So it's on the top. That's the normal way. The next one is under. If you don't already know this, every cable, I'm sure we do this here, right? Every cable should be wrapped that way.
This.
Yeah, over under.
That.
Sort of, yeah.
That's like a. I think that's like the rope trip.
The reason is it doesn't. It's and you know that, Kara, like, right? Of course. Like Miriam would have taught you that day one.
Like when you do this,
they teach you that in college.
And if you do it correctly, you should be able to take the roll. You should be able to hang on to. So if you do it,
it never tangles.
It never tangles.
So you wind up with this piece of metal.
No, don't do that.
Okay.
No, stop. He's tying it knots, ladies and gentlemen.
So what that's created from is if you pull it through itself, that's exactly what you get. It will create a knot at every cycle.
That means you've done it right, but you've done the last part wrong.
So, but if you do it correctly, you should be able to just take your rope, even if it's 15 feet, and go like this.
Whoop,
and it's all like, you know.
Over, under. Everybody should know that. That has been the most valuable tip. That's the reason why you listen to all 2 hours and 15 minutes of this show.
I don't want to get into personal stuff, but isn't that how your third marriage ended?
Just like
endless
that.
Over under.
Endless over unders.
No comment.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for being here. It's fun, isn't it? Don't you want to just spend the rest of the day with the MacBreak crew? Well, you can't, but we'll be back next time.
Next week.
And we'll do more. Andy Iannacco from the Chicago Sun-Times, CWOB.com.
I'm not interested in your stupid rules, man. I'm a maverick.
The
I'm
rules,
untamed.
Man.
I'm broken.
It's not a rule. It's a gift. It's a gift.
Hey, Renee Ritchie from iMore. We're all over-undering right now. Sorry. from iMore.com. Ladies and gentlemen, we do this show every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That's 1900 UTC on Twit. Watch live if you wish, but you can always get on-demand versions after the fact at twit.tv/MBW or wherever you subscribe to your favorite shows, including, by the way, Stitcher and Slacker and iTunes and all of the iPod apps, all the podcast apps, Overcast, Pocket Casts, and of course on Apple TV, there's 4 apps, and on and on and on. Please do join us each and every week. We'll see you next time. Now, I'm sorry to say, no more hobnobbing with your buddies. It's time to get back to work. Because why? Because break time is over.